Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. College football guru Phil Steele says Ohio State's got the sixth toughest schedule in 2026. Top-ranked Buckeyes play three teams in the top 10, five total from the top 25, including a trip to number 5 Texas in 25 days, Saturday, September 12th. The Longhorns got some great news regarding left tackle Trevor Goosby, who left practice Monday with a left knee injury. An MRI returned a bone bruise in that knee, putting the 6'7", 320-pounder on the shelf for 2 to 3 weeks. Goosby should be ready for that game against Ohio State, week 2 of the college football season. Games in week 0 begin next weekend. Week 2 of the NFL's preseason begins Thursday. Browns host the Bills Saturday. Same day, Bengals welcome the Bears. And in baseball last night, Guardians beat the Giants 8-1. Cardinals blanked the Reds 3-0. And the Clippers stomped the St. Paul Saints 19-3. This update is sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com to make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then,
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Bo, the boys with you for the next three. A little higher or lower comes your way early this week. 9:45 for a little higher or lower this week. 10 o'clock, we hit your Hey Guys an hour earlier as well. So get your Hey Guys questions into the fellas at 971-BFS. You can also do so in the YouTube chat. We'll take them there live as well. Jake Trotter, ESPN, going to join us at 10:30. And then two-a-days in the 11 o'clock hour, we are in the NFC South. Look, this is some of the casualties of two-a-days are the NFC South and the AFC South. Usually those two divisions are a little bit behind everybody else. We'll see where things track down this way with that. We'll do the Saints today, and we will do the Tampa Bay Bucks. Former intern of mine, Evan Klosky, will join us at 11:30, now sports director down in Tampa, former Buckeye as well. So you have that to look forward to, which is very, very nice. I have, over the last week, I finally cracked the NCAA college football video game. For whatever reason, in the first incarnation of it, they don't have like all the freshmen in it. Like some of them are in it, like Timmons is in it, but like Chris Henry's not, Brock Boyd is not, like some of those freshmen aren't. They don't have quite all the names right. I'm sure they'll do an update here in the next couple weeks and get all the names right. So usually I will do two Ohio State seasons on Dynasty, and then I may play one with the beloved ponies. So you can do this pretty quickly now, because for the kids, for the old heads out there, the kids know this, you don't have to play full games. So you can play moments, so big third downs, you can play just offense, you can play just defense, whatever you want. So I just play offense, so a game will take at most 15 minutes. So you can fly through half of a season in an hour if you want to. And over the last week, that's what I've done with the Buckeyes. So I play offense and defense on the big game, and I play just offense on the nonsense games that they play. And you're probably saying to yourself, well, Bo, why in the hell do we care what that you're spending 20 minutes here and there playing video games over the last week? Well, here's why it jumped out to me as I was doing this last night. When you get into the Buckeye schedule and you think of it from the perspective of, am I going to play the whole game? Or am I just going to play the offense because I'm disinterested? There is a stretch of play where with that as the backdrop, you're playing the full game almost every single time. The heart of the matter is this. This schedule, which the Handsome Update anchor just said, Phil Steele said, was what, the sixth best or sixth toughest schedule in college football, might even be more difficult than we realize. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday in regard to multiple three-loss teams getting into the playoff. Guys, it's happening in a big way. I understand it's a simulation. I understand it's a video game. I just got through the Michigan game last night. There was the top 10 in the country is crazy. Like, Memphis is in the playoff. UNLV is in the playoff. All the SEC teams have three losses. Like, it's utter chaos. And the Big Ten schedule, like, Oregon went 8-4. That's what they did in this thing. And as I was playing this, I'm going through these games one by one. And obviously, you start with Ball State, then you get a big Texas game. But there are other little micro stretches that are really interesting. For example, playing Illinois at home on September 26th and then going to Iowa the following week. The stretch that's going to get all the attention, and it should be, there is a bye mixed in here, but nevertheless, at Indiana, bye week, at USC, Oregon at home, those three consecutively. And then before you play the Michigan game at home, you got to go this crazy trip to Nebraska, third to last weekend of November. This schedule is much more difficult than we realize. And I thought we should play a little exercise here to maybe illustrate kind of where it is. So if you break this schedule down into three groups, that's a dub. In other words, win, no worries about it. Win, cover, handle business, take care of your business, no threat. Second category, confident that they'll take care of business. And then the third being 50-50. There's not a fourth category of losses because no one expects them to lose anything. They're probably only going to be an underdog and maybe the Texas game, maybe, but they're number one. Texas is 5. So they'll probably be a favorite in every game they play. So there isn't a fourth category. So let's just go through these. I'll give you the game, then you give me win, confident, or 50-50. Ball State, that's a win, dog. Easy. All right, boys. Texas. Win, confident, or 50-50?
50-50.
I'm confident. Okay, I don't trust Sark.
Okay. On Texas. All right. And you both went win on Ball State. Kent State, we don't have much time on that. Illinois, home.
Confident.
That's a win.
One confident, one win. At Iowa.
That's a win.
That one I'm a confident.
Vengeance.
Crazy things happen at that place.
They do. Maryland at home.
Win.
Dub, dub.
Is that homecoming likely?
Probably.
I think it is.
Yeah, probably. Is that an opportunity for a night game?
Probably.
Feels like it's in play, right? At Indiana.
Confident.
I think that's a 50-50. I got to give Sig his credit.
God. If it was socially acceptable, you'd go over there and steal him from his wife, and you and him would go have an apartment filled with rich mahogany. You love him so much.
I don't know.
Your day in heaven is going to be me voicing his 30 for 30.
That is going to be, like, I'm going to push for
you're
that
so
big
excited.
Time. I mean, excited. I think you're going a little far there, Bo, but I'd love to have a first Friday with him. That's for sure.
Was that a little bridge too far?
Yeah.
Other than driving into Indiana, you're fine with it. At USC after the bye week.
That's a win.
Confident.
Oregon here.
50-50.
I agree. Northwestern here. Win.
Win.
At Nebraska.
Win.
Win.
Michigan.
Win.
Win.
So it kind of illustrates the point. We could have done this exercise last year. And the 50-50 games would have been Texas last year?
At the beginning,
maybe Michigan?
At the beginning of the year, I think you would have said Penn State would have been.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I don't know if I would have said Penn State 50-50. I probably would have put Penn State in the confident just because James Franklin doesn't ever beat Ohio State. So I would probably put that in the confident, not 50-50. But Texas is probably the only 50-50 game last year, along with maybe Michigan, just because of the weird things that had happened in the previous years. But you knew that the talent wasn't going to equate. The point here is, from a talent equates absolute standpoint, Ohio State is at Texas. They are at Indiana. They're at USC, Oregon, maybe Michigan, close. You're talking about five games of a 12-game schedule where if the talent doesn't equate, it's negligible the difference. And then you have another rung of games like Illinois here. Do I think they'll beat Illinois? Yes, I do. But I also think Illinois is really well coached. And I think that they'll probably be ready to play in that game. The game at Iowa, you have more talent than Iowa. Absolutely. But could it get tricky out there? Yeah. Yeah, probably. In terms of just like no-brainer, roll out a ball, let's go. Nothing to worry about here. Play everybody. It's Ball State. It's Kent State. It's Maryland. Northwestern-ish. And Nebraska-ish. Like 4.5, 5 games that you just have nothing to worry about. And it's been a while since we've had it like that, where you've had that many challengers. This is what happens when the West Coast teams have come in, and now you have USC and Oregon in the conference, and that's a massive difference. You don't have Rutgers on the schedule this year. By the way, the other thing that changed is you've always had, a lot of times you have Indiana on the schedule. Indiana forever wasn't the 6th-ranked team in the country. Things have changed, and the schedule's gotten more difficult. And when you think about what it's going to take to get into the playoff, 10 wins is going to put you in a very, very good spot, in my estimation. Ryan Day did weigh in on the schedule, the challenges of it. You'll hear from him on that coming up in 18 minutes from now. Todd Monken with some candid thoughts on how he ended practice and why he ended practice early yesterday up in Berea, which was something I hadn't seen before. We'll get into all that as well. We're off and running on a first Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on
Ben and Ice.
Celebrities that I think I would be starstruck by. And my list is all females. So my list.
Rothman and Ice, weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mostly cloudy sky continue into the afternoon. There's a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, but a lot of that activity will hold off until late. Highs end up around 80. Areas of rain and thunderstorms overnight. Locally heavy rain is possible. Lows in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, some showers possible early, then decreasing clouds in the afternoon. Highs again near 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gerst.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Guys, I was just looking at this in the break and looking at the other teams that are, you know, top 10 or what we would consider national title contenders. The only one, there's two that kind of have the vicinity of a schedule as tough as Ohio State's. One of them is LSU. LSU plays Clemson in their opener. They are at Ole Miss. They got Texas A&M at home. They've got Bama at home, Texas at home, at Tennessee. So that's 6 ranked teams on their schedule. We'll see. And they go to Auburn, which I think could be sneaky. They could be a sneaky team. So they go to Auburn as well. So that's one that's got some juice to it in the SEC. Georgia's got nothing. There's nothing for Georgia that's in the vicinity. Texas is as tough because they play us. They also are at Tennessee, who's ranked 20th, Oklahoma ranked 10th, Ole Miss ranked 9th, Missouri 25th, at LSU, and then at A&M. Texas's schedule is probably in the vicinity of Ohio State's, but I don't know that anybody's got a stretch like Ohio State does that's Indiana, USC, Oregon back to back to back. I don't know that there's a stretch like that. And then you add Texas at the beginning, Michigan at the end, and everybody in between, and you can certainly make an argument it's the toughest schedule in all of America, in the vicinity of it at the very, very least. Ryan was on with the Juice Boys last week, was asked about the potential of playing upwards of 11 top 25 teams.
When you look at our schedule, I said this yesterday, if right now on our wall, there's 17 games listed. If you look at the 17 games, I'm predicting at least 11 of them are going to be top 25 matchups, probably top 15 matchups. Like, how amazing is that going to be for us in terms of gaining an identity and winning games in the fourth quarter? And so that as we continue to work through the season, by the time we get to those games at the end, we're going to be ready for these matchup games. Probably listed on that schedule is more matchup games than we probably ever had in maybe the history of the school. I don't know. But I can tell you it's going to be a challenge. So what is it going to force us to do? Be at our best every single day. So we're excited about the challenge. We got some unbelievable road games, and we're going to have to be tough early in the season.
It's not hyperbole. It's probably likely that they'll play 11. To win a national title, it'll take 11, because on the schedule as it stands right now, they've got six on the schedule right out of the gates to start things off. You got six ranked games. That's if nobody else in the Big Ten rises up. That's if Illinois doesn't start undefeated and they end up being ranked somehow, some way. Nebraska, not very optimistic of that. But those six, then you get a Big Ten championship game. That's going to be ranked versus ranked. And then every game you play in the playoff is going to be ranked versus ranked. Here's the thing that I think I'm curious about from a college football fan perspective. Can we all get used to teams with multiple losses being in this thing and not having the panic of a loss means the end of the world? It would be disingenuous for us on a Monday after a loss in Austin to say the sky is falling. It's not. It's not falling. But historically, for 100 years of college football, you lose a game and the sky falls on a Monday. Those things are different. I mean, Ryan has said this many times, like the expectation of Ohio State is to win every game you play. Well, that's not the expectation of the Kansas City Chiefs. That's not the expectation of the Los Angeles Rams, is to win every game they play. So, and it's really an us problem. It's not their problem. It becomes their problem when we don't have patience for some of that. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. If you don't have patience for it, then you're going to be much like Indiana, and most of these schools are going to schedule like Indiana, and they're not going to play anybody in the non-conference. The SEC teams, Ross said this last week when he said, look, we can't get anybody on the schedule past 2030 because nobody wants to play us because everybody's got nine conference games. So you got a choice as a college football fan. You have to be okay with some losses or be okay with your team not playing anybody out of conference. I feel like that's where we're headed.
I do think there's some positive that can be taken with the expanded college football playoff. And this is me just trying to be as positive as humanly possible with it. Because when it expands, I think you're going to see more teams 9-3, 8-4, if it's a really tough schedule and they were competitive through that, because you're still going to have the committee, right? And the committee's people. And so they're going to be able to talk themselves into situations that we're going to look at now and go, that's insane. Why would that team be in it? Yeah. But if it's a Notre Dame from last season and their losses are single digit losses to teams in the top 25, again, this is once the playoff goes 14, 16, 20, 24, 30. Then I think that the team, the committee is going to say, okay, well, these one, two close losses are going to be for coaches a way of, all right, well, I can still schedule these tough games because I want to have my team prepared for the college football playoff. Again, this is going to be 3, 4, 5, 2030, 2031 type of thing. But maybe there's a case where the committee does a 180, rewards teams for their tough scheduling, and then coaches go, okay, well, I don't want to avoid the smoke. I need the smoke to get my team prepared for the playoff. So I'm going to do tough out-of-conference scheduling so that they are ready not only for games in the college football playoff, but games in conference when things get tough.
I guess I have two pushbacks on what you just said, Reese.
Oh, I'm sure there's more than that once you get to 2030.
You said I need to prepare my teams for the playoffs, but we've talked about the last three national champions haven't played anybody, and it didn't affect them at all in the playoffs. Yeah. Ohio State blew through the playoffs.
Now, well, I would it affected Ohio State last season not playing anybody because they weren't prepared when they played somebody.
Did it affect Indiana, though?
I would say no.
So that, I think that's the pushback on that. And my pushback on the Notre Dame thing is, isn't that what we play the regular season for? And I get it. It's not like that in the NFL, yada, yada. And I've said this before. I think the difference between 1 and 32 in the NFL is like 1-10 in college football. I just don't like Indiana's blowing out Oregon last year, and we thought Oregon was a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Ohio State blew out Oregon 2 years ago, and I think Oregon was probably the second best team in the country that year. So I get what you're saying. We think we're going to get more competitive games and this and that, but we thought when they expanded to 12, we were going to get more competitive games, and they've actually run from it.
Here's what we know about. So it's hard because you can't do generalities because sometimes you just have a special team, right? Sometimes. And the other thing you have to realize is still, for the most part, we're dealing with people ages, what, 19 to 22, 23? And so that's the biggest difference between pro and college right now is just in the NFL, it's grown men. And they make mistakes, but they're grown men, and they're providing for families, and they have responsibilities beyond it. There's a professionalism minimum that's required. So I think that's why you get a little bit more consistent play. Do I think that the Oregon teams the last 2 years were four touchdowns less than Ohio State and Indiana? No, I don't. I don't. I think sometimes you get caught up in it, and a pebble becomes an avalanche. I think that type of thing happened to them in two instances, and it becomes kind of a mental thing. The thing that we know for sure about college athletics, and by and large for coaches and athletic directors, is they want to give the very least to chance for the most part. It is honestly something to applaud the way that Ohio State has scheduled out of conference for all of these years. I mean, they've been doing this the entire time that I've covered Ohio State. This will be my 20th season. This is every year. They've tried to do something like this. And the only times they don't have something like this is when somebody bails on the schedule that was already in the works. They always have a big non-conference. That was before you added Oregon and USC. And one of the things that I said about Ohio State's being able to schedule all of these teams historically is the Big Ten provided some breaks. It did. It wasn't as good top to bottom in a pre-NIL era, in a pre-free transfer era. Indiana wasn't Indiana. They were old Indiana, right? You didn't see the financial might of some of these Big Ten programs, and you didn't have these teams out west. So you could play USC and Texas and Virginia Tech and all of these schools out of conference, Oregon out of conference, and even if you did suffer a loss, as they did some of the time, there were still plenty of Big Ten schedule and plenty of built-in wins. Those built-in wins are going away if you schedule the way that they're scheduled this year. That USC, Oregon, Indiana, Texas, Michigan, these are not built. There's no built-in wins there. You'll be favored in them all, but there's no built-in wins in that group. And if you play, Ryan talking about 11 games where you're going to be playing ranked teams, that's all pretty close to talent equates. And so you're going to lose some of these things. And I'm not for this, but what we know about college athletics is they're going to go the surest way possible. So I think more and more by the time you get to 2030, if you stay at 9 conference games, I think by and large, it's going to be almost impossible not to have 3 cupcakes on that schedule. I think most teams will do that. Because if you give them an inch, they'll take 7 miles. And a 24-team playoff has taken 7 miles. That's what it is. You're going to have 8-4 teams in this thing. If they go there, that's the way this thing's going to go. So it's going to take an adjustment for all of us on how we talk about it, how we observe it, our emotional connection to wins and losses. All of those things are going to be a little bit different if they inevitably go to that way. And I think we kind of all think that they will as they continue to get to that NFL model. It feels inevitable, unfortunately. I'm not for any of it, but that's where we're headed. The Browns had a very interesting practice yesterday. What it was intended to be versus what it actually was. I was there, watched it. Todd Monken had some thoughts on it from the coach's show last night. We'll share all of that with you in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
Slope and Juice.
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Here's the reality of it. Training camp is really long. And I think you could probably say there was even a fight yesterday, I think, in Saints-Cowboys, a couple of fights. Saints-Cowboys had joint practices. This is a long time, man. Yesterday was training camp practice number 16 for the Browns. They haven't had a single practice where they've hit anybody other than themselves. They played a game against the Bears on Saturday. And quite honestly, tensions are rising, as they would be. You've been doing the same thing for a long time. Todd Monken is running kind of an old school NFL camp that's very honest to who he is as a coach. So if it's a 2-hour and 15-minute window, he's using the entire 2 hours and 15 minutes. He's not cutting anything short. He's running the full gamut of it. If it's a padded practice, then it's a contact practice. Now it's thud. It's not full contact. No one's supposed to be touched or go to the ground, but it's thud and you're getting hit in the hole. That stuff is happening. So that's something that he's doing every single day, and so tensions start to flare a little bit. We saw him a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday practice. Quinshon Judkins hit Mike Hall as he was coming in pretty hard, pretty out of line, led to a fight. And Todd talked about that post practice. So fast forward to yesterday. Yesterday up in Berea, I was up there and was at the practice, and it was a Deshaun Watson practice. So it was his day with the ones. Shadur had the day Monday, and then Deshaun had the day Tuesday. It was a padded practice. And so, start of practice offensively, pretty lackadaisical, not much inspiring. Middle of practice, Deshaun had it going a little bit. And probably if you're looking for a criticism of Deshaun Watson in training camp, it is probably that he is still probably a little too cautious with the football. He's probably too quick to get rid of it underneath versus pressing it down the field. That's something that he needs to just rip it when he sees it, and he hasn't really done that. But he had a good moment in the middle of practice, and there was a little bit of practice momentum. So there's about 30 minutes left of practice and probably 25 plays that were scripted. And this was move the ball. So this is as close as you're going to get to real football. They're lining up for a series of downs. It's first and 10, and you pick up a play, you get a first down, you keep the drive going, you try to get points. If not, unit two comes in and they go. And so earlier in practice, Quinshon Judkins got taken to the ground. Mike Hall was back at practice yesterday, by the way. First time he's been back since all the way in it's been 2.5 weeks. So Mike Hall was back at practice. He was wreaking havoc. As an aside, they had him as the second team defensive end because of all of the injuries. So he was running second team defensive end and wrecking practice with that too. He looks great. But the physicality was there. So Quinshon Judkins got taken to the ground. Todd Monken stopped it, blew a whistle. That's enough of that. So fast forward to now, about a half hour left to practice, about 25 plays left. Quinshon got hit again pretty good. Not to the ground, but it was testy. And the defensive coaches are running out, and they're all jacked up. And Todd wants to kind of keep things going. And then Shadur Sanders gets hit. You don't touch the quarterback. If you're watching Hard Knocks, you've heard Mike McDonald. He threw one of his best defensive players out of practice because he got near Sam Darnold. Now, Shadur Sanders is not Sam Darnold, but it doesn't matter if it's Shadur, it's Dylan, Taylen Green, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow. You don't touch the quarterback. You just don't. And it wasn't intentional, but he definitely did. And as Shadur threw the ball, you know, his arm kind of came down on the defender and definitely he hit his helmet, and he shouldn't have been in the mix of it at all. And then a couple of plays later, they run a play with Quinshon, and he kind of gets Jared Verse. I don't know if this one seemed inadvertent. He kind of almost ripped off his guardian cap type thing, and Todd blew the whistle. And then that was it. He got offense and defense together, was pretty animated in his conversation to both sides of the ball, and then met with his defensive coaches and was very animated with them about what was happening. And so I'd never seen that before. It happens. Like, you throw people out of practice. Sometimes you just end it and that's it. That type of things happens. This is the first time that I'd seen it there. I think there's a million factors that led to it, but it was one of those things where it just was abundantly clear that they had hit each other enough. Todd Monken on the coach's show, which you can hear right here on The Fan, had this to say last night on the Tuesday practice.
Well, we've had really two great days of practice. I was really fired about the way our guys came back after playing Saturday off Sunday and the Monday practice we had. And today got a little chippy at the end. It just did. And Browns take care of Browns. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that was the emphasis on this thing from him is we cannot have Shadur get hit. Obviously, he's a quarterback. I don't need to see Quinshon Judkins get taken to the ground when we're in pads but not live. Like, that can't happen. And that happened a couple of times. So, I just think you can chalk this all up to they've been hitting each other for a long, long time. But I think that what you're seeing is they're trying to build a little bit of that fire on both sides of the ball. And the defense is kind of having their way right now. And that's the other thing that's a little tough, I'm sure, for Todd and his offense.
Yeah, probably not what he was thinking, you know, going into joint practice tomorrow. But when you got guys getting German suplexed in other parts of the league, I would think, for the head coach here, you want to make sure that your guys aren't crushing each other before tomorrow. So they got the Bills for the joint practice Thursday, yep. Then Friday, not a joint practice, but then Saturday's game two of the preseason. And when you're trying to figure out the most important position on your team, I guess you want to mitigate the chaos. I don't know how much of this,
sure.
You know, is with Monken. I just keep going back to, if you know, just name it, and then everything else can kind of trickle down from that, because I said this yesterday, but they're running out of time.
So on that front, here is Todd. He did give his ideas on what he told you what's going to happen Thursday in the joint practice with the Bills. Here he is on that.
Well, we're going to divide the reps. So the way it's going to go is there's going to be, Joe and I talked about it, there's going to be 10 reps with the ones. He wanted to get more work with his 1-0 line in there, like their extended drives.
Yep.
So we're going to go 10 plays with the ones and twos somewhat, and then 7 plays with the twos and threes. That'll be rundowns, pass downs, and red zone. We'll do pass skelly that's a little bit shorter than that. So we're going to give each quarterback 5 of those reps. I really haven't even gotten to the twos yet of how we're going to divide that up, because it's interesting. There's still 7 that you get opportunities, but at least I know the ones will basically be 5 and 5, 5 and 5, 5 and 5, and 4 and 4, and pass skelly for 8. When we do that, we'll divide them up as equal as we can.
So that's how it's going to go with the ones. I think what will be curious is if Deshaun or Shador will go with the twos, or will that be Dylan with the twos? Because I kind of think to the point where I don't need really to see Dylan do anything at this point. And I just, if they need more data on Shador versus Deshaun, then I would just give those guys all of it. That would be the way I would handle it. If you don't know still, which again, I have a hard time in my head believing that they don't have some, certainly a lean, then I just want to see those two guys. I don't need to see Dylan do anything at this point.
Yeah, and with the reps, you know, that he kind of mapped out there when he's talking about the ones, have they still solidified a starting 5 up front yet?
Reese, I can only handle one problem at a time, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're doing quarterback now. I don't know if they think they have a right guard. I think that they're, I mean, we had a practice yesterday where KT Levison went out. Yeah, I mean, it was a battered practice. So, like, up front, I mean, DeJuan is the swing tackle for sure. I don't know if they trust anybody who they have at right guard right now. We haven't seen Parker Brailsford, who I know they like a lot. Haven't seen him in a long time at center. So they've got some things up front that got to get sorted out. But I'm kind of with, I just think at the quarterback thing, like, the sooner the better on this. And then you can start preparing one of them.
And then you can start preparing the offensive line for that quarterback. The trickle or the ripple effect that this would have makes it, to me, a more frustrating thing every day you go insistent on the, we're going to share the reps. Shador day, Deshaun day, and Shador's going to start Saturday, and then Deshaun's going to get the second quarter, the second half. And I just go, how much time are we going to waste trying to figure out which of these two if you already know?
I heard Nathan and Coach talking about Austin Barber, who's one of the backup tackles playing guard yesterday, and just seems like it's all hands on deck on that offensive line. I'm with you, Bo. I kind of tend to believe, like, we know what Dylan Gabriel is.
Mm-hmm.
He's played in the last 5 years more football than any of these guys. And he's had a lot of reps, and I think we know what Dylan Gabriel is. He is a number 2 backup quarterback in this league.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that can come in and keep you on the right path, at least. It's not going to go off the rails with him. So I don't want to see Dylan get anything with the number 2s. I say you keep giving these reps as many as you need to Shador and Deshaun, because it sure seems like Dylan is not in conversation for the number 1 starting quarterback job, and there's reasons for that. So it's one of these two. Give them as many reps, get as much data, see what you need to see on those guys, and that way you can figure out your answer if you don't truly know the answer already.
Yeah, if they're still on the fence, then I think that Thursday is what it all comes down to. Like, if it is. Just watching it all, it does feel like the lean would be Deshaun, that would be a lean. But I don't, it's not an overwhelming lean, like it's a lean. So if you're, from my vantage point, I just would want to see those two guys do everything. And then I'm very curious, like, you know, I was kind of looking forward to seeing Taylen Green do something in the preseason. He's done nothing. I mean, he doesn't even get reps in practice. And he's a 6th-round pick. Last year, remember, we're doing rep counter for a 5th-round pick. We're not doing rep counter for the 6th-round pick anymore, I noticed. But, like, the reality is they have to get to a point that Deshaun and Shador are just so different skill-wise. They're just really very different players. So, to me, the quicker that he can get to this, the better he can prepare a team for either one of them, because the asks are different. with the two players. So to me, that Thursday joint practice against Buffalo has obviously got to be the one that everyone's circling. And we've been saying that since July. So we'll see. It's a lot on one practice. I'll say that. It's a lot on it. It does feel like it. We'll get a little higher, lower coming your way next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
screen. In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, ooh, just to name a few, live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan. The Fan guest hotline is sponsored by KDHVAC, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive Yellow Jackets and Wasps. You've seen them. NBC's been bit by one just 2 days ago. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family. Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. That's a long time. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE. Visit rosepestsolutions.com. Time for a little higher or lower. Hit it, Reese.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
Soon.
That's the Big Ten's music. Folks at USA Today have compiled a list of 18 players. They've ranked them.
All right.
Who might these 18 players be? Well, the starting quarterbacks for your Big Ten conference. This from Paul Meyerberg. Is the okay. Big Ten the conference of quarterbacks? Ranking the league starters from number 1 to number 18. Where do you want to start on this?
So I haven't seen this at all. So I will, let's go, I think let's go right from the top. Let's just get right to it, right at the top of the heap.
At number 1, Julian Sain.
Okay.
At number 2, Dante Moore. At 3, DeMond Williams Jr., still at Washington. Higher or lower for Williams at 3.
So I think 1 and 2, 1 and 1A, right, with Sain and Dante. And if you want to go the other way, I could see how people would go the other way. I think this is too high for DeMond Williams, and I do like DeMond Williams a lot. I just think it's a little too high for him. I think he's a top 5 guy. I would go Sain 1. I would go Moore 2. Number 3 for me would probably be the guy that they have at 5. But that's just a personal thing. So I would probably move him up. I would probably move DeMond Williams down a little bit.
So, Bo, I like how you said that with the 1A and 1B type thing there with Julian and Dante. I think they're both so very close to each other. And I think it's splitting hairs. I would go with the 6'3" and the size of Dante Moore. That would be the separator for me, where I would put him at number 1 and Julian at number 2. But it's a paper-thin margin.
Mm-hmm.
I like DeMond Williams at number 3. I know he's a little bit smaller on the scale for quarterbacks, but I think he is a pretty good quarterback. I'm not sold on Jaden Maiava like a lot of people, and I've heard really good things coming out of Indiana this week about Josh Hoover. People saying maybe he's even better than Mendoza. I'm going to have to see that to believe it, so I like DeMond at 3.
At number 4, Josh Hoover. Indiana, Jaden Maiava's at 5. Nico Iemalieva, UCLA quarterback at 6. Rocco Becht, Penn State's quarterback at 7. Bryce Underwood at number 8. Higher or lower for Michigan's quarterback?
I think this is too high for Bryce based on what he did in year 1. I think his ceiling is higher than, for example, Rocco Beck's, but I don't know that I could put him ahead of that based on what I saw. I do think this is a good ranking for Nico Iemalieva. I think he's almost gotten to the point where he's underrated a little bit. I just always have respect for that kid. I mean, I have no respect for what they did off the field, trying to basically leverage Tennessee for more money while they were in the middle of a playoff. But at the same time, he came in here and got his brains beat in and kept getting up. And so I respect. I mean, didn't his helmet break, for God's sakes? Like, I just have respect for him. So I think that's a fair spot for him. I think Becht will be solid at Penn State. Bryce Underwood, the ceiling is higher, but based on where he is right now, I would probably go a little bit lower. I think, honestly, guys, when we talk about this, I think this is one of the big what-ifs in the sport this year, is what if it works or doesn't work? You could do it either way for Bryce Underwood at Michigan with Kyle Whittingham. I have no idea what to expect with him up there. I know he's going to be very competently coached. I know that a lot will be asked of him as a signal caller in that system. I know that they are incredibly incentivized to make it work with him. Certainly has the talent to be able to do so. All of those evaluators can't be wrong on it. So, to me, he's the biggest question mark in terms of a high-low for a team in the Big Ten is probably Underwood.
I think it's a little too high for Bryce Underwood. I think we all forget he was a true freshman last year, so yeah. There's a lot to learn. And that Michigan program was just in shambles last year, and who knows all the things that we don't know about. I do think I would drop Bryce a little bit. If I'm going to go with an athletic quarterback, I think I would like Malik Washington of Maryland a little more than Bryce Underwood. And I think there's another guy coming up that might be a little too underrated as well. I would have Maiava and Hoover flipped. I think they're in the same spots for me. I would just have them flipped.
So this higher or lower is USA Today's ranking of 18, of all 18 of Big Ten starting quarterbacks for the 2026 season. At number 9, Anthony Calandria of Nebraska. At 10, Drake Lindsey of Minnesota. At 11, Malik Washington of Maryland. At 12, Colton Joseph, starter for the Wisconsin Badgers. At 13, Caden Hauser, the starter for the Illinois Fighting Illini. Higher or lower for Illinois starting quarterback?
You have to like, what, now where are all these guys from? Like the guy at 14 started at Oregon State, was really pretty dang good, then followed Jonathan Smith to Michigan State, and now he's at Northwestern. So, by the way, I think he'll do, I know you didn't ask about him, so I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I think he'll do really well in Chip's offense. I still think that kid has some talent. I have no earthly clue on Caden Hauser. I didn't watch a lot of East Carolina games last year, so I can't tell you exactly how good I think he will be in that spot. I'll tell you what, Wisconsin, Luke's got to win 7 games. Is that the guy to do it? Colton Joseph at Wisconsin, a lot on him. I like you, Bake. I like Malik Washington a little bit more than where he's. I think Drake Lindsey could be a nice player at Minnesota as well. Minnesota has a nice team this year. They could be a little tricky for some of the teams in the Big Ten. But some of these guys at the bottom of this thing, this is like back of a milk carton stuff, trying to reassociate yourself with these guys and the teams they're currently on.
Bo, I'm with you on Drake Lindsey. I would actually have Drake Lindsey up at number 6. On my list. He had a really good year for Minnesota as a freshman last year. I think he accounted for 22 touchdowns and only 6 picks. So I like Drake Lindsey a lot. I think Minnesota's a sleeper team this year in the Big Ten. I don't think people realize they had 9 wins last year.
They just did.
Especially around here, because Ohio State beat them, 42-3? So I don't think people realize how good that Minnesota team was last year. I don't even know what a Colton Joseph or a Caden Hauser are.
I don't know either. Never heard.
So like, I would have them lower, just maybe a little lower, because I think Aiden Childs we might grade a little unfairly, because Michigan State was in total disarray.
Yeah.
Last year from the top down. So I think Aiden Childs is a little bit better of a player, and I would have him over both of those just because he's a known commodity.
I would too. Yeah. I like him a little bit more. But it is a deep conference. And that Minnesota team, kids, pay attention to that Minnesota team. That not necessarily to threaten you at the top of the Big Ten, but there I would not be surprised if PJ has some success out there this year. Second hour of the program on a first Friday. We kick it off with a little, hey guys, still time to get your questions in to the fellas at 971BFS. We can also take those live in the YouTube chat. We will do that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. The first game of the college football season is 1 week from Saturday. Texas Christian plays North Carolina at noon in Dublin, Ireland. Ohio State 17 days out from their season opener against Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Buckeyes are back to practice this morning and will hold a Saturday scrimmage at the Shoe. OSU is going to play three teams in the AP preseason top 10. Top-ranked Buckeyes will travel to number 5 Texas Saturday, September 12th. The Longhorns hope to have their 6'7", 320-pound left tackle back in time for that game. Trevor Goosby left Monday's practice with a knee injury. A Tuesday MRI says it's a bone bruise for the Longhorns left tackle. He'll miss 2 to 3 weeks. In baseball last night, Guardians beat the Giants 8-1. Cardinals blanked the Reds 3-0. And the fans at Huntington Park got a show as the Clippers stomped the St. Paul Saints 19-3. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 Ultimate Buckeye Experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Your emails on the air, but we won't tell you where to send them. Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a first Friday. Jake Trotter coming up in 28 minutes from now. 11 o'clock hour, we hit you with two-a-days. We will do the Saints and we will do the Buccaneers. Evan Klosky, former intern of mine, good dude, sports director down in Tampa, will join us at 11:30 on that front with a perspective on the NFC South. Right now, though, time for a little hey, guys. Hit it, fellas.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag hey, guys, and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by Rose Pest Solutions.
All right, we're getting answers. We're getting hey guys, I should say, in at 971BFS on Twitter. We're also getting them in the YouTube chat fast and furious this morning. We'll start with Phil, who asks, hey guys, does Tyvis Powell ever go home and hold his newborn son?
Jeez. Listen, I'll have you know something. I definitely go home. Actually, this is how my day goes. So I get done with here, and then I go home, and the first thing I do, the first person that greets me at the door is my dog. Max is man's best friend. He's before every kid, and I have to greet him first, because if I don't, he's just going to growl at me until I do. So I greet Max first. Then I go around and I give my youngest daughter a kiss because she always runs, daddy, jumps in my arms. I throw her in the air, give her a kiss, put her down. I go find my oldest, give her a kiss. Then I go to my wife, give her a kiss. And then finally, I get to the little guy and I hold him and I kiss him and I hold him for a little bit. And then I send him back to his mother and I go about my day.
What are you still doing here?
I have to do the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show hit segment in 17 minutes.
Do you have to do that in Baker's box?
I'm doing it in the Brown studio. And then after that, I have to handle some business. I have a business obligation.
Oh.
Yeah, I got to do some stuff for Cardio because he's out of town.
All right, so none of this is interesting. Here's what I would say is interesting about all of this. You said something. You said this is what I would take to answer the question, if in fact it is a real question. Here's the question. Why is a dog running your house?
I mean, why does he run in my house?
He's running your house. You said the first thing you got to do is praise Max because
right.
Max will growl at you.
Yeah.
That means he's the alpha.
No, he's not the alpha.
You're not even the alpha in your own house.
I think
you got a dog running the show.
I think,
you know what I do to Buddy Garrity?
What do you do?
You wait, dude. You wait. You wait your turn.
It's annoying.
You sit there respectfully and you wait.
Bo, it's annoying. He goes sit there and growl at you.
He's running things.
He won't let me hug my wife. Anytime I try to hug my wife,
okay.
He comes
so
and
I
barks
guess we
at
know
us.
Who the man of the house is.
Hey, you know what I heard, Bo? I heard if the house was on fire, the dog's getting saved first. That's what
dog
I heard.
Dog might be saving Tyvis.
I mean, I take
dog
that.
Might be putting you on his back and rolling out. Might be how that goes.
I don't think
he's running things.
Well, hey, you know, he's falling down the totem pole, and he wants to make sure that he still gets his love. Can't be mad at that.
He's running things. You got a dog running the Powell household. That's sad. Make sure your son doesn't see that. You're trying to raise a grown man. You can't have him being submissive to a dog.
I need to go talk. I need to turn into Dr. Doolittle and talk to Buddy Garrity and see if what you're saying is true.
I'm telling you it's true. That's fact. My guy waits. He knows. He understands the pecking order. Now, I like him more than everybody else a lot of the time, but he still has to understand his place.
Well, it's Max, though. I can't, you know.
What kind of dog is it?
It's a miniature golden doodle. Little 26-pound-year-old little dude. Little guy.
Is that even a dog?
Yeah.
No, fits in a purse.
Fits.
It's not a dog.
Well, if Tyvus is wearing it, it's a satchel.
I mean, I was hoping that you had like a real dog.
No, you know, a lot of places.
You even just admit it. No,
nah,
I don't.
When I was apartment living, they wouldn't allow those type of dogs in the apartment.
You can't get a bulldog?
No.
Why not? They're small.
I don't. That one's. First of all, I like Max because he doesn't shed.
You know, okay,
that's a
all
big
right.
thing.
So that's okay. Yeah. That, well, that's smart. Otherwise, Buddy Garrity leaves a coat around the house every day. It's a pain in the neck. Yeah, that's fair.
Josh asks in the YouTube, or actually asks on Twitter. This is from Josh at 971BFS. Who's the most famous person to graduate from your high school? He adds, I'm guessing since Bo went to school in Montana that it's probably him.
Probably. I mean, it's a town of 250 people, so there's not a whole lot. We had that all-school reunion. We don't have like a Halle Berry like Tyvus has to lean on. You guys probably have a great list as well. I mean, Reese's is apex.
Number one,
the Golden Bear.
Well, like, number one is Tyvus Powell.
Hold on, you're still here?
Yeah.
He can't
I thought
leave.
You were gone.
It's a bad job out of me giving him his headphones.
Yep. Tyvus Powell is number one. Then is Halle Berry.
I'm going to ask this.
She's 60, by the way, and still throwing 170.
Yeah. I saw her post on Twitter.
It's like not hard of seeing.
Yeah. Yep.
Good night, nurse. It's 60. Bringing it.
Would more people know Jack Nicklaus or Beverly D'Angelo?
Jack.
Okay.
I think there's a generation of kids who, unless they would know her as the mom from Christmas Vacation.
He's leaving, right? Finally.
Finally. Don't you think? Most kids would know her as the mom from Christmas Vacation.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd know her name. I know her quite well, but from a... If you're young, I don't know that you would know. I think everybody knows Jack.
And I know you hate Entourage, but Barbs.
I do. I don't. I just think it's wildly overrated.
Yeah.
And they just focused on idiots as opposed to just doing the show about Ari. That would have been what you should have done. But they kind of turned into that as it went along.
So interesting. You speak of Beverly D'Angelo and her going to Upper Arlington High School. I went to school with her nephews. So her nephews, one of them graduated with me. I want to say it's probably Gary Burley from my high school, former Bengals player. But Derek Combs was 2 years ahead of me, former Buckeye, and he played in the NFL with the Packers and the Raiders. And also former Buckeye, it's funny, he graduated with Derek, former Buckeye defensive coordinator Alex Grinch graduated from my high school. 2 years ahead of me. So those would be the three.
There was a Hollywood actor way long time ago named George Montgomery, who, God, you'd have to be old to know him. He starred in Westerns. Who's the Mount Rushmore of Upper Arlington? I mean, good Lord. From there, obviously Beverly and Jack would be on there. There's an incredible list of people who have lived there. But in terms of, like, from their UA guys, it's pretty impressive list, Reese.
Yeah, I was. I'm fond of that 2000 Division I championship team with Simon Fraser. I think it's Dr. Jeff Backus now. It might be Dr. Simon Fraser too.
I think you might be right on both of them.
I think you might be right. Yeah,
definitely Jeff.
So pretty damn good football players, but now also doctors.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
Pretty good. Good job out of the Golden Bears. Yeah.
We'll stay in the YouTube chat for our Hey Guys again. We're doing this live, so we can read it on the air. We're going to. Cardinal asks, Hey Guys, you can wipe your favorite TV series or a championship season for the Buckeyes with selective amnesia. You can watch them for the first time. What will you choose?
I'll tell you what. There's so many of those HBO series that I'd like to watch again, just having no... I don't know that there's anything I enjoyed watching more and talking about more than Game of Thrones when it aired live. I mean, I just thought it was so fun because you didn't know anything what was happening and the quality was so great. I just would have stopped it before the last three episodes. I just would just stop it then. My favorite, it's interesting because, so I guess what he's saying is the Buckeye season that you have to relive would be one that you would have to relive with the results being the same.
Yes.
So, I'm sure for Bake, that's 0-2. probably you too, Reese.
Without a doubt.
No question. Because that's undefeated. It's perfect. It's all of those things. And it's out of nowhere. Like, it's pure magic all the way along for that ride. So I'm assuming that's kind of a layup. I mean, the other two national championships, probably 14. But, I mean, I just remember 14 was a lot like Game of Thrones, honestly, because when Braxton went down, you thought it was done. When JT went down, you thought it was done. And then it kept not being done. And my favorite sporting event I've ever covered, been at in my life, was the national semifinal against Alabama. That was the coolest thing that I've ever been at. To go down there, to beat them in their place, to be on the sideline as Zeke went 85 yards through the heart of the South, and as the Buckeyes kind of spilled out onto the field following him, and you knew it was the nail in the coffin, you looked up at the Superdome, and the monitor, the video monitor that you looked up to, was directly above the Bama student section. And so you saw Zeke score, and then you panned down, and you just saw the despair of the Bama tears, which was spectacular. So I guess it would be that one.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely 0-2, because 0-2 kind of had everything. It wasn't easy,
yeah,
but you won every game, and even down to the last play with the defensive pass interference coming out late and all of that. So, yeah, it would definitely be 0-2. I will say this, and I've talked about this, I hated the 2024 season throughout the season.
Yeah.
But that four-game run, if you could go back and watch that again for the first time through the playoffs, that was pretty daggone good.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, 14, the end was so much fun. Because we talk about, you know, I've mentioned that last year's Michigan win was one of the more cathartic in Ohio State football history. The semifinal win over Alabama, I think Trussell's first win against Michigan, like, those are up there in terms of, if you want to argue, cathartic wins in Buckeye lore.
Bo, yeah. I believe I've told you this before. I only watched like a quarter of the 2014 playoff because I worked at a place, colors are brown, that you deliver packages.
Oh.
And I would have to get up super early, and I fell asleep after the first quarter of, yeah, the Alabama game. So I was like, well, I didn't watch it and they won. So I just went to sleep and didn't see any of the Oregon game. So that would be like watching it for the first time.
You'd be seeing it for the first time. Yeah. Those are great. I mean, there's some good ones there. That's a very good question. We'll continue with the Hey Guys questions. Jake Trotter coming up in 17 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Hey, this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
A JT Barrett comeback special. It's Ohio State and Penn State from 2017.
Hear Buckeye replay this Saturday at 4 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mostly cloudy sky continue into the afternoon. There's a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, but a lot of that activity will hold off until late. Highs end up around 80. Areas of rain and thunderstorms overnight. Locally heavy rain is possible. Lows in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, some showers possible early, then decreasing clouds in the afternoon. Highs again near 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gerst.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Find us on YouTube. Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 180 years. Before we get into the Hey Guys, a couple of interesting ones from social. RBW on social, additional info about Beverly D'Angelo. I knew this part. I don't know if you did, Reese. Her dad, Gene, was the president of WBNS for a long time. And was the boss at Channel 10 for a long, long time.
I did not. Did he hire Dom?
I believe he did. Yeah. I believe he did hire Dom. I'll ask him about that on Tuesday when he comes by, but I'm pretty sure he did hire him. Snagglepuss with this, enjoyed all the different reasons. I'm taking the 2014 because I never experienced anything like 59-0. That game removed a Heisman from Melvin Gordon, put the Big Ten in its place, and then what resulted, but that game will always bring me joy. That game was probably among all the games I've covered at Ohio State that I was there in person. That is the most I have no idea what's going to happen game. I had no idea. Buckeyes were big underdogs in that game. I want to say 10 I think like 10. I could be wrong, but they were definitely dogs. Wisconsin was perfect, and we just hadn't seen Cardale Jones do much. So you just had no clue what you were going to get out of Cardale Jones. So that was a fun one for sure. And then they did it so emphatically that it forced the committee's hand to make them the four seed in the playoff, and the rest obviously is history. All right, race continue. A little bit of hey guys.
So we're going to stay at 971 BFS. Andrew pops in. Hey guys, what song are you choosing to replace the camp song now that it's been removed? And I just read that from Andrew, not knowing if it's officially been removed.
Yeah, I think Ross said he kind of intimated with us, and I think maybe with the juice. I can't remember where, maybe with T-Bone and Tyvus. He said it didn't hit, and it didn't. Nobody knew the song, which was the problem. We've already done this. I've given him a layup. It's all the small things. You just say, instead of work sucks, I know, you just pot it down. You say Michigan sucks, I know. That's it. Everybody knows the song. It would scream. You do music with it, lights, whatever. It's, you can't do it at the end of the first quarter. It can't be in a first television timeout. It's got to be something that you know that it's coming, so that maybe it's the first television timeout of the fourth quarter, something like that. And just make it abundantly clear that this is what's happened, but it has to be a song that everybody knows. That's the one I would do. We actually got him to play it there once when Threes and I were doing the show, like we had a campaign, and they played it. But we didn't make enough of a deal. I didn't have enough of a dialogue with Ohio State Ops in terms of like, here's when it's going. Make sure people are aware of it. Here's how these things happen. We do Hang On Sloopy in the third, and it's lost its momentum. You can't change it. You're obviously going to always keep it. But I do think you could add that. And I think that a song like that, anytime we do this, Reese, and you know this, you get 1,000 emails or social media saying, well, what about this song? What about this song? The jumping off point is everybody's got to know the words. That's the jumping off point. So Dixieland Delight works at Bama because everybody knows it. Won't Back Down works at Florida because everybody knows it. You have to know the song. Same thing, unfortunately, begrudgingly, with Mr. Brightside. Everybody at Michigan Stadium knows it. Now, obviously, they don't read the words, because if they read the words, I'm not sure they'd be belting it out. But that's something that everybody knows. You got to know the song.
You mean the Michigan man would let something like that go?
They really were asleep at the wheel with all that higher education they have.
I understand the question because of Ross's recent comments. I also don't give a rip. I don't care. Like, I'm not going to a football game for a song that they're going to play every time that everybody sings.
Nobody
to.
Is.
Like, I don't
No, it's
care.
About enhancing the environment.
I know,
though.
But I don't care. I don't need it. That doesn't do anything for the environment to me in the football game.
I'm
That's
telling
just
you what.
Me. I get
I'm
it.
I'm just going to tell you, if I took you to Tuscaloosa and they played Dixieland Delight, and you heard 90,000, it's fun. If you see Eastbound and Down at Doak Campbell Stadium, it's pretty cool. Calling on Baton Rouge at LSU, really cool. Like, the jump around thing is really cool. Those things are fun,
that.
Man. They add to it.
I understand. We have Hang On Sloopy, though. I don't understand why that's not good enough.
When's the last time you've been? It just doesn't. You're still going to do it. You're always going to do it. It is good enough, but it doesn't have the same. That's a song that's 70 years old that a lot of people aren't crazy about screaming at the top of their lungs anymore, you know? It's just unfortunate. I'm not saying stop doing it. I'm just saying I understand what Ross is going for with this.
We go to the YouTube chat with Jay. Hey, guys, it's almost football Friday night. If you go, are you sitting in the stands or leaning against the fence?
This is a great question from some. I mean, this is really locked in. So I have my seats are 50-yard line all the way up. So from the time the boys were little, I've had 50-yard line seats all the way up. And I prefer to not have anybody behind me so I don't have to hear absurd comments from behind me. I just can watch the game and focus on it. But that's always been without NBC playing. So when the boys play sports, I go to the corner by myself. I go to the corner of the field by myself and watch if the boys are playing. So I don't know what I'm going to do now that NBC is playing. I don't know where my hunch is. I'll probably try to still be in my seats. But my favorite place to watch any sporting event, basketball, lacrosse, football, is to go in a corner and watch from there. I think that's the perfect place to watch. And then you're distanced from everybody saying silly stuff.
I have seen you do that at a lacrosse game, so I've stood right next to you for that.
You see me do it. You lived it. How many people were near us, Bake?
Not many. Just your kids and their friends when they came by.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. I want to say I'm more of a stand-on-the-fence type of guy. I guess I haven't been to a high school football game just watching as a fan for a long time. So I guess it was like if I went with people back in the day, they would usually want to sit. So I would go up and sit with them.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the high school football games that I've been to recently, I've been working them. So I've either been in a press box or down on the sidelines. So, mm-hmm. But I would say my preference if I was by myself is to just go stand on the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a sit in the stands kind of guy just because you're usually with somebody. If I were to go by myself, like the fence just being closer to the game. But now it does feel like, and I understand with that high school in Georgia charging for sideline access, mm-hmm. those areas do get really crowded if it's a big enough school. Mm-hmm. And so I think the bleachers gives you the best shot at the game because nowadays you're getting a ton of scouts and other people that are covering. I mean, there's so many newer outlets, and that's not a bad thing. There's so many people that are crowding the sidelines. It's you can't really see anything if you're trying to watch football. Mm-hmm. At 971BFS on Twitter, this from Hunter. Hey, guys, what's the one interaction that left you the most starstruck?
Super Bowl after the first one after 9/11 down in New Orleans. The Superdome is a kind of a catacomb of, this was pre-Katrina too, so it was even more of like a maze almost to find your way around. And then security was at an all-time high because it was like the first big-time major sporting event since 9/11 after the World Series, which that was in New York. I mean, this was in New Orleans. And I ended up in an elevator. The press box was in the stands. I was actually sitting near, like, I'll never forget this, sitting next to like Tony Kornheiser and Bob Ryan. And I was like a 22-year-old kid covering it because it was on CBS. And I got out of an elevator and I walked right into George W. Bush and his Secret Service team. Walked right into him. And obviously I was in a place I was not supposed to be in any way. But I remember just thinking, well, good Lord, you just walked into the President of the United States. And that's probably the one that jumps out.
So I've had two. One was actually this past winter when we were down at Reds Fest doing some stuff, and Tito and I got to interview Marty Brenneman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a guy that I'd listened to my whole life and wanted to do what I do now because of listening to him. So that one was an all-timer. Another one was, I believe it was 12 years ago, the other station that I worked at. Obviously, there's a big concert in town called Rock on the Range at Sonic Temple now every year. And I got to interview Chris Jericho after his band played. And then later on that night, after the headliner played, we were in the headliner's dressing room. And Chris Jericho came in to talk to them. And I happened to be talking to the lead singer at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was just me and him. And Jericho came right up to us. And he recognized me from earlier. I'm wearing a Cincinnati Reds shirt today. His eyes were as red as this shirt because he had been partying. And we were just sitting there talking hockey for like 15 minutes. And it was the greatest thing in the world.
That's cool, man.
This was 2013. Just starting out my media career, didn't run into Tiger Woods at the Memorial, but like he held a media scrum and he was just standing and I was maybe 2 feet away from him. And I remember thinking, I can ask him a question, but I was just, my brain wasn't processing anything, but holy bleep, that's Tiger Woods.
There's a lot of those in this business, especially when I was in television. You run into just so many. You find yourself in the most absurd places talking to the coolest people. Among the coolest people we talk to every week is our good buddy Jake Trotter, senior college football writer at ESPN. He joins us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Let me introduce you to a man with a magnificent salt and pepper beard. A man who's currently roasting lamb on a spit. A man who runs the Rocky River Greek Festival. That man is Jake Trotter.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, buddy. I remember we were doing 20 Most Interesting a couple of years ago, and we had on Oklahoma Sooners were on the list, and we had on a Sooner beat writer, radio host. I can't remember who it was, but I remember him saying this vividly. It was when they were entering the SEC for the first year, and I said, so what led to this? And he said, honestly, one of the big things that led to it was the inventory of home games, that the Oklahoma fans were just kind of disinterested in the games that were on the schedule in the Big 12. And because they would play the neutral site game against Texas, there just wasn't enough that they thought that was part of it. Obviously, money helps, and that was probably the determining factor. But it was also part of, hey, we want to see some better teams. I bring this all up because Ohio State is going to currently has six ranked teams on their schedule. Texas has six ranked teams on their schedule. And we are in a trend, and Ross Bjork said this last week when we were talking to him, where he's having a hard time getting anybody to schedule him out of conference in 2030 because everybody's kind of going the Indiana way. Which way do you think this all goes? You've been around college coaches a lot. You've covered some of the biggest programs. How do you think this inevitably goes? Because we were told when we went to 12 and inevitably to 24 that this would allow for more robust scheduling. But will the proof be in the pudding on that?
Great question. I think it's very. I think some teams are going to take the Ohio State route where they will play that one big blockbuster non-conference game. And I think some teams are going to take the Nebraska and the Indiana route where you're playing group of sixes and FCSs. You still have some of these rivalry games. So, for example, you know, USC and Notre Dame are going to, play again when it looked like that series was going to go away. But I think it's just going to depend on the school. And then I think also, if a big team, let's say Ohio State loses to Texas, and that's the determining factor, and then not getting in the playoff this year, then maybe they rethink that strategy. Or maybe you lose to Texas and you get in because you played that game. There's so many unintended consequences of, potential playoff expansion that I don't know if anybody knows exactly how it's going to play. And then also, I think different schools are going to have different strategies for how to combat it, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think the other thing that we need to see is we need the committee to actually reward tough scheduling. Like, we need that. They put Alabama in last year as a three-loss team. It caused quite a bit of consternation. But if, for example, you're Indiana or you're honestly, the best example this year is Penn State, Jake, because, I mean, you look at that. It's hard to imagine them not going 10-2. I mean, that seems very much in play. I guess I could see them going 9-3 if they lose the game that they shouldn't. But 10-2 is in play for them. And then you look at the schedule and you go, okay, what was accomplished here? So it's going to take some real doing, I think, from the committee to reward the teams that schedule the way Texas, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Michigan schedule.
Yeah, and I typically, back in the BCS days, it felt like there were a lot of years where you were rewarded for who you lost to instead of who you beat. Mm-hmm. So if you had a good loss, that seemed to count more for your standing versus, the wins that you actually had. For me, it's all about who you beat. If you lose, you lose. And if you have a bad loss, you have to take that into account. Notre Dame, was it Northern Illinois? Who did they lose to a couple years ago?
It was Northern Illinois they lost to at home.
Yeah, Northern Illinois.
Year one with Marcus, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, obviously, that's a really bad loss that you have to overcome. But to me, I'm more impressed if you go on the road and beat Texas versus, having the good loss. There's a little bit of subjectivity to this. But to me, I think I'm going to look more favorably on the teams that have the tougher schedules, even if that means they have an extra loss in there.
Do you think we get to a point, I was talking about this earlier in the show, I'm curious your thoughts on it, because you've covered both, like I have, NFL and college, and I said this, the Rams don't expect to go 17-0. Like, that's not the expectation yet. Around here, if Ohio State doesn't, then every time they lose, we treat Monday as if it's a funeral. And Ryan Day said, look, all I got to do is win every game I play. And that's similar mentality at Oklahoma and other places around the country. With a 24-team playoff seeming inevitable, do you think we will ever get to a point where college football fans accept losses?
No.
I hope not. No. I hope not.
No. No. Yeah, I mean, like, you're right. You lose in the NFL, and it's like, all right, you know, you got another game. You know, like you said, even the teams with the biggest expectations, you know, they're going to lose. They're going to have some bad losses, inexplicable losses. They're going to have some meltdowns in the fourth quarter. You know, all that's part of the NFL. What matters is how you play in the playoff. I don't think we're there with college football. I mean, there's just certain things with college football that are different. You don't have to worry about, with the exception of the Clippers, in professional sports, paying players under the table. It's just right. Not like a thing. But in college football and college sports, you know, it feels like there's no way to stop it. So it's just a different mentality. And part of that is, especially at places like Ohio State, losses are just unacceptable. Doesn't matter what the playoff is. It doesn't matter how many games we play. You know, for the fan base, there's just this, for lack of a better word, entitlement to winning every game. And that's why Ohio State is the program it is. And yeah. That's why there's only, you know, 5, 6, 7 programs that are on that type of plane.
Yeah, no, it's a really special club, and I hope it stays that way, because I love that. I love the absurd overreaction to wins and losses. I love all of that about college football. Talking to the great Jake Trotter, senior college football reporter at ESPN, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We're inching closer to kickoff here and getting the season underway. As you've started to do, kind of looking into the various teams that you'll be paying attention to this year, are there some storylines that have piqued your interest that maybe aren't getting the national attention that you think that they will once the season gets going?
Under the radar storylines. Put me on the spot here.
Well,
I'm going to ask you about Brown's quarterbacks in a second.
You can. I'll let you. Go ahead.
By the way, I was listening to you and Nathan. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
And you guys did not sound like you were having a good time. You sounded
well. We like offense.
Like practice was going very well.
Z and I like offense, so when it doesn't go well,
yeah, it was not a lot of reflected. Offense, huh?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So I'll give you an example. Here's two that are in your vicinity that I know you've been to. Bryce Underwood with Kyle Whittingham. What does that look like? Because I think the golf on Michigan's big.
I think that's the.
I do think it is nationally. Nationally, it is. Here locally, no, we're locked into it. But nationally, no one's really talking about that and the idea that Kyle Whittingham is coaching at Michigan. It's not getting quite the national talk that I think it probably deserves.
Well, and I think Bryce Underwood in general, you know, he went out to California and worked out with Joe Burrow and Carson Palmer's brother to try to get, you know, sharpen up some of his fundamentals. I mean, he's a wonderful talent, but there is a scenario here where it doesn't click for him. And all of a sudden they're in bad shape at quarterback again. I mean, he made some plays last year, but you look at his numbers and they weren't very great, you know, and they did not have a very, I think, functional offense, you know, relative to the top teams in the Big Ten. So, I mean, you talk to some scouts around the league and in the country, and there's a lot of mixed opinions about Bryce Underwood. It's not like everybody feels like he's just going to be a superstar this year. It's a huge year for him because, you know, if he struggles again, then all of a sudden, you know, Michigan is kind of in no man's land again with, you know, the direction in their offense. Because I don't know how long do you think Kyle Whittingham is going to be there for?
No more than 5.
Right, exactly. So they just, ever since they won the national championship, they've just been kind of wandering. You know, they've had all the scandals that, you know, they didn't even really recruit Underwood that hard until last minute, which was really strange considering, you know, he played at Bellevue, which is like 20 minutes away from Ann Arbor. You know, it's like, if there's like a superstar quarterback in Pickerton in Ohio State, we're good.
We're good. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was just that whole thing was really strange. In fact, I don't think Sharone Moore ever visited his high school.
My hunch is that was Harbaugh not interested in all that came with that, and then they went to Moore, and then he needed a recruiting win in a big way, so he called in some people to make sure he got one. That's my read of that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I just don't...
Yeah.
why would he not be interested?
Harbaugh?
Yeah.
I think because of the price tag and all of that. I don't think that he was interested in all that came with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of hype. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that can backfire on you. But, I mean, you see him in person. He is like 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah.
I mean, he and, you know, obviously can run. But, you know, they've got Detmer and Jason Beck and Whittingham. I mean, you almost have to throw out last year with him because it was such a mess. And not just with the off the field stuff. I don't think he was coached very well. They didn't really have like a quarterback coach, which is kind of strange. And they just did a lot of weird things. Like their best receiver, Andrew Marsh, didn't even play until like mid-October. And they didn't have any receivers to throw. I mean, everything they did was really strange. Yeah.
I have no idea. I think competently coached, who knows what they could be.
I don't think they were competently coached last year. And they still had a pretty decent team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that is a fascinating one. All right, I'll give you 30 seconds on the Browns quarterback question.
Okay, break it down for me. Go ahead. What's up?
I think Todd Monken is making a choice. He can either choose, can he get Deshaun Watson to become less risk-adverse and drive the ball down the field and believe in what he sees and trust his arm, or can he get Shadur to get in line in terms of just operation and to take less risks down the field? So that's, to me, what Todd Monken is deciding between. Does he?
And it feels can
he get Deshaun to that point, or he can?
Right,
what's that, buddy?
It feels like neither option is feeling that great at the moment. Fair?
neither answer is complete.
Yeah.
Neither answer is complete. Like, if you were looking for one
Watson's
of them to
gonna start, Watson's going to start. This is a scenario that is really interesting for them. So they've got two tough games. They got Jacksonville and Tampa. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be favored in either one. There's a good chance they lose both. Okay, you're 0-2. You come back to Cleveland and you play the Panthers, and if you throw a pick in the first quarter, I don't know how that fan base is going to take that. They might be out. Well, they will be completely out at that point. And so when you're doing weird things like you can't introduce the offense because of your quarterback and pregame, like it's just problematic. But hey, they've got some interesting skill talent finally.
Yeah, they got some weapons. So whichever guy plays, in my hunch is they'll both play. So you're going to get a pretty good, at least you get a fighting chance with those weapons. All right, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right. See you, Bill.
All right, there he goes. Jake Trotter, senior college football reporter at ESPN on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little Thing or Not a Thing on a first Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
By now, you've likely seen one of several fights from yesterday's Cowboys-Saints scrimmage. If you haven't, at 971BFS, I will post the video of Scott Steiner's son giving Cowboys safety Jalen Thompson a pretty picturesque German suplex.
Hold on a second. The Scott Steiner's son?
Yeah, Big Papa Pump's got a kid on the Saints.
Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
He pops his hips pretty well in that German, considering they're both wearing pads.
Wow.
I think he was a wide receiver that played for Jacksonville State.
Jacksonville State, that's, yep. That's the college.
I'll be danged.
So, holler if you hear him this season for New Orleans. There were reportedly double-digit skirmishes throughout that session yesterday in California, meaning there was an interruption about every 10 to 15 minutes. Speaking after the fracas on Wednesday, Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer told reporters, quote, "Right now, I'm in charge of Fight Club. We're going to play on the edge, and we're not going to take bleep from anybody." He adds, "At the same time, I don't think the Saints were the only ones stirring up the bleep. I think we might have been stirring it up as well. It was a sloppy practice, all in all, and it's got to be better," end quote. Thing or not a thing.
Doesn't Kellen Moore coach the Saints?
He does.
So two Dallas guys with Dallas ties. Did Brian Schottenheimer replace Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator in Dallas? I think he might have. I think that's the timeline on all of that off the top of the head. Yeah, you want your team not to take anything, but at the same time, like, you can't fight. I thought Stefanski had a really good rule, and he always worked it out. They did joint practices with the Eagles several times. They did it with the Panthers. They did it with the Vikings. You find a like-minded coach, and you just say, hey, no fighting. Like, that's just the rule. We're just not having it. And then it's fine. You're always going to get a little heated, a little testy, for sure. Like we talked about earlier, like, these guys haven't hit anybody from another team enough. So, like, they want to hit people. I get it. But at the same time, you got to take care of each other. And there's just there's no time for this. This is how you get hurt, doing stupid stuff like this.
That one yesterday seemed to be one of the worst ones that I've seen, and it went on forever.
Yeah.
I just think that you have this when you have a bunch of young guys playing a physical game with a bunch of testosterone built up, and I think you're going to have that. I think it's inevitable. Yeah, you don't want it, but I think you also love the fight of your team a little bit when you see something like that. That one, though, it seemed like somebody could have got hurt yesterday. And I don't think that there's any doubt that one Brock Recksteiner is going to be joining his cousin, Bron Breakker, in WWE pretty soon.
Oh, so he's already got a cousin that's in it?
Yeah, so Rick's son actually played football at Kennesaw State. He was a starting running back.
Okay.
And pretty good. And I think he went to camp with the Baltimore Ravens. Okay. And he might have got hurt in camp, and that ended it all for him. He ended up going straight to WWE.
Soon-to-be former Los Angeles Lakers owner and possible financial crimes committer Mark Walters reportedly been looking for cash to fund billions of dollars in loans over the last couple of months. According to John Arand, Mark Walter engaged Charter Communications to see whether the company wanted to exit its local TV deals for the Lakers and Dodgers several years early in exchange for a lump sum payment. Those talks apparently went nowhere. Dodgers currently have one of the best local TV deals in sports. 25 years, $8.35 billion for an average of $334 million annually. Walter was willing to exit that deal early in exchange for cash up front. Thing or not a thing?
Wow. I mean, this is succession. Because you got the Buss family part of it, too. You got this Walter guy who owned two of the most iconic sports brands in the history of this country, and the Lakers and the Dodgers. He apparently owes money everywhere, trying to get out of this deal. The other part of a thing of this is like $334 million annually. How does that stack up to the Reds and Guards annually on their TV deals?
Just a little higher.
Good Lord.
About $334 million higher.
Is that four zeros?
How do you even... These things are not the same sport when you're doing that. So, my God. Please some of them do it. I want to say FX does this a lot, like pulled from the headline stuff. Like, do a series on this, on what happened here.
I would think, especially as more of this comes out, because there's a lot to this.
Yeah.
That it's coming, because the one thing I know about rich guys, Bo, is they don't like getting out of sweetheart deals. And that TV deal for the Los Angeles Dodgers, I remember when it was announced, it was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, this is insane for baseball. And if he's trying to get out of that, that means he was in some pretty sticky situations.
Bigly. Yeah. The full details on this are going to be pretty fascinating when it all comes out, and inevitably that it will. Final hour of the program up next. We've got two-a-days. We are in the NFC South, the Saints and the Bucks on deck. Get your officially endorsed as well. Final hour on a First Friday. Bishop and Friends right here.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. College football guru Phil Steele has Ohio State with the sixth toughest schedule in 2026. The top-ranked Buckeyes play three teams in the top 10, five total from the top 25, including a trip to number 5, Texas, in 25 days, Saturday, September 12th. The Longhorns got some great news regarding left tackle Trevor Goosby, who left practice Monday with a left knee injury. An MRI returned a bone bruise in that knee, putting the 6'7", 320-pound tackle on the shelf for 2 to 3 weeks. He should be ready for that game against Ohio State, week 2 of the college football season. Games in week 0 begin next weekend. For some reason, North Carolina's playing TCU in Dublin. Week 2 of the NFL's preseason begins Thursday, but the Browns host the Bills Saturday. Bengals welcome in the Bears the same day. In baseball, Wednesday, Guardians host the Giants at 6:40. Same time in Cincinnati, the Reds battle the Cardinals. This update is sponsored by Hydrate Me Med Spa. Look great, feel great, personalized wellness and aesthetic treatments that work from the inside out. HydrateMeMedSpa.com.
10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Get your officially endorsed coming up in about 45 minutes from now. Time now to continue our journey through the National Football League with Two-A-Days.
Bishop and Friends present Two-A-Days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? I doubt it.
Well, here's the long and short of it. The Crib Notes version of the NFC South, although be careful with my mouth on this. It cost me a set of golf clubs for NBC last time I was so bullish, or the opposite of bullish, I guess, bearish on the NFC South. I don't think any of these teams are contenders for anything, and I think in many instances these are all kind of like trying to figure out what they are. You could make an argument, certainly with the team we're going to lead off with, the New Orleans Saints, that they kind of have everything and maybe they have the quarterback. But if they don't, they would certainly be a team that would off-ramp to a tank very quickly if Shuck falls on his face this year. This was a 6-11 team last year. Kellen Moore is your coach. They did get a little momentum as the season went along. There is a ton of talent on this team, certainly when you comes to the offensive skill position players. And obviously Jordan Tyson, they add him, although he did get hurt early on in camp. But they added him to a mix that looks like it could be pretty good. Beyond that, you have Travis Etienne to the weapons that are already there. A sneaky signing I like for them is Martin Emerson, former second-round pick of the Browns. He's a really good player. He's coming off an Achilles, but he's one of the guys, quite honestly, that I wish the Browns would have re-signed back, because I think he could have helped them a little bit with their secondary issues. They've added talent. They have weaponry. It's really going to be an indictment on Shuck entirely. Some big losses. Demario Davis obviously leads those. But other than that, this is a program that is in the build phase, and I do think that the Saints coming out of Breeze, the Bucks coming out of Brady, Carolina kind of finding its way, and maybe they found something with Bryce Young, and they hope that they did with the way he played last year. Remember, he was benched to start last year and then found his way back. And then obviously the other team here is the Bucks, that are in this weird spot with Baker Mayfield trying to figure out if they want to go down that road another 5 to 6 years. I don't know what to make of this division. I think a team could win it at 9-8. I think that's very much could be in play. I don't think there's a great team in the bunch. This New Orleans outfit, New Orleans is an interesting in a very interesting place, especially post-Katrina. They probably don't need to have an NBA team. That is probably one that probably need to go in another market. But I'm going to tell you this, and I've spent more nights in New Orleans, Louisiana, than any city other than those that I have lived in, like had residence in. I've spent probably 50 nights of my life in New Orleans. And I'll just tell you this. I've been there on a Sunday morning for a Saints game. They love the Saints. Love them. And are loyal to them. And when Drew Brees was there, that was the thing to do, man, was Saints games. And it's a really cool environment. They walk kind of to the Superdome. They have this incredible tailgate, as you could imagine, with the food and the cocktails and all of that. And they love their Saints. And so when they're good, They certainly have that state by the throat, let alone that city by the throat. I don't know what to make of them this year. This is entirely a bet on Shuck and if he can be good or not, if he can be their franchise quarterback. If not, they can pivot this thing and draft at the top of the draft and would probably be in a very, very good spot. The skill position guys, Tyson, Olave at receiver, obviously at running back. You got Etienne back. I see Alvin Kamara is going to miss a couple of months now with an injury, so you're going to have to wait on that a little bit. They're decent at tight end, pretty decent up front. It's just kind of about
Chuck, and if he's a dude. Defensively, they're pretty good, too. They're not in a bad spot there. So they're just young, they're growing, and it's just a matter of if they have the quarterback or not. That's kind of the simplest read on New Orleans for me, guys.
The older I get, the, I guess, grumpier I get about tanking and the discussion around it, even though I said for years, like, oh, this team needs to tank, or that team needs to tank. And then I go, no, you're a billion-dollar operation. No, you don't tank. Don't try and go out there and lose. And I think it's just me getting older. And you also forgot Brock Reichsteiner. Who will suplex you, number 89 for the Saints, and then put you in the Steiner recliner.
That's true.
Which is, I think, what New Orleans wants to do to this division. I just don't think they're quite there yet. They've got a daunting task ahead of them. Week 8's their bye this season in year 2 under Kellen Moore. In week 7, they're playing the Steelers in France. So that could be ugly for New Orleans. But they've also got the Lions, the Ravens, the Falcons, Vikings on their first... that first block before they get into the bye. They see the Buccaneers in the last month, they see them both times in the last month. The Carolina Panthers, they'll see weeks 10 and 14. So I think you kind of know coming back from France what New Orleans is going to do in the direction that they move in, but certainly the talent's there where they land the quarterback. Yeah, you win 10 games. You win 8 games.
Yeah.
As long as you win most of the games in your division, you might get an NFC South crown.
I have a little different feeling about this New Orleans team than you guys do. And a lot of this, of course, does depend on Tyler Shuck. And I don't know if I'm there with him. It seemed like he was showing some signs maybe at the end of the year, but I'm not sure. I love Chris Olave. He's one of my top 5 Buckeyes of all time as my favorites. And Jordan Tyson, I think, was a good pick. And I've loved Alvin Kamara in the NFL, but he's getting older. And you just mentioned he's going to miss at least the first month of the season now. It seems like they've brought in a bunch of guys that were drafted high, and they're hoping to use them as reclamation projects all much. Mm-hmm. Like ETN here, a couple of the guys on defense that Noah Fant at tight Chase end. Young. They brought him in. Yeah, Chase Young, a couple of these guys, Tyree Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this roster... is very good, quite frankly. I think they've got a lot of holes, and I don't love a lot of the young players they've brought in the draft recently outside of Tyson. So I think this team, I think if Shuck shows he can be good, they're going to think they have something, but they need a lot more.
They do. That's why the division's tricky, because it might not take much to win it. I think what gives them a little bit of confidence in Shuck is that 3 games, they won 4 in a row with him. He didn't get the starting job until the end of October, and he won 4 in a row in December. He beat the Bucs 24-20, 13-20, 144, just a pick. He beat Carolina 20-17. He went 24-32, 272, a touchdown, no picks. He beat the Jets 29-6, 32-49, 308, and then he beat Tennessee 34-26, 22-27, 333, and a couple of touchdowns in that one. So that's what they are hoping for. For them, if they are bad and Shuck's the answer, that's catbird seat, because now you can trade back and get multiple picks. Mm-hmm. So this is really a Shuck. They need to figure out what they have with him. That's the only real job this year for the New Orleans Saints, as far as I'm concerned.
They also brought in a safety net at quarterback in Mom Slayer Zach Wilson.
Oh, gosh, he's still around. God bless him, Mom Slayer. Coach grade for the New Orleans Saints and Kellen Moore.
C+. The second year, won 6 games last year, not a very good roster.
I gave him a B- because I think he's got a pretty good football mind, but I don't know if he's a good head coach or not yet.
Yeah, I got to go see on this. It's hard to say. Too early. We'll find out if he's one of those follow me to freedom guys, or if he's an X's and O's guy who could put you in a great spot. I would be encouraged if I was New Orleans how Shuck played in the month of December, though. So that would give you a little bit of cause for optimism. Uniform grade on the New Orleans Saints, Reese.
I think it's a B. It's a solid uniform. The blacks with the gold helmet, I like. The alternate, the all whites, pretty good. They're away with the gold pants. It's a good look.
Yeah, I like them.
I give them a B- on this one. You definitely know it's them when you see it, but I've never really been in love with their colors or their uniforms. I don't like the white ones, Reese, at all. I think the black helmet is okay when they do it, but I'm not a huge fan.
I think it's a B+ for me. I like it because it's identifiably them automatically. I love the fleur-de-lis on the side of the helmet. I actually love when they go gold, black, gold. They've been going the unitard look for a while with the black over black. I'm not as big of a fan of that. I like the breakup of the colors. So I think that it has a potential to be really good. I'm like you, Reese. I love their all-white ones, the throwback ones that Arch wore. I love those when Archie Manning played for them. So I think those are really cool as well. But I think overall, probably a B+. One franchise great you could add to this team. Who do you got, Reese?
I'm going to give him Drew Brees. I think they'd win the NFC South.
That would help.
Yeah, I think that's the correct answer here. I also have a fondness for back in the day when they had was it Ricky Jackson and Sam Mills at linebacker. I think either of those would fit very, very well on this team.
Well, they had Ricky Jackson, they had Sam Mills, and they had Pat Swilling. And those dudes were ready to go on the defensive side of it. I think all of those guys would be good. I think Malcolm Jenkins would be really good, too, on the back end of their defense, just to kind of lead, show him how to be a professional. Malcolm could do that, and he absolutely loved New Orleans. But, yes, the answer is probably Drew Brees. Franchise tier for the New Orleans Saints. This one's a little tricky.
To who dats, I'm going to give him a C.
Yeah, that's where I was. I think this is a middle-of-the-road franchise, a perfectly average grade of C.
Yeah, they had the Breeze run, which would have been an A run, right? But the question is, was that just all him and Sean Payton and the perfect storm of all of that? Because beyond that, there's a lot of bad in their history. I think it's, you guys probably have it right. It averages out to about a C franchise, which for us on this scale is slightly below average, with S obviously being at the top. Win it all, building, busting, playoffs, what are they?
This is a team I think builds. They're not a bust, because I guess if you win, you know, you tank and the fan base would be okay with that.
If it nets Archie's grandson, I think the fan base would do cartwheels right over that. Yeah.
Can I say a build that's going to be a bust? Because I think that's a busty the road build. That's what I think that's the road they're heading on. Because like I said, I don't like a lot of the young pieces they've added.
I do like some of the pieces, but obviously this is going to come down to Shucks especially. I think that at this point we would call them building. Kellen Moore in year two. I like their young talent a little bit more than Bake does, but it'll all really come down to Shuck and if he's a guy or not. It's kind of that simple. A team that probably ought to be the favorite in the NFC South is the team we're going to do next, and yet they are in a transition as well. 8-9 last season, the Tampa Bay Bucks. What do you do with Baker Mayfield, among other things? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
You know Buckeye football. These two say, hold my beer. The Beat with Austin and Berm.
Sponsored by the Waterworks.
Daily on the Fan. YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Your home of the Buckeyes, the Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mostly cloudy sky continue into the afternoon. There is a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, but a lot of that activity will hold off until late. Highs end up around 80. Areas of rain and thunderstorms overnight. Locally heavy rain is possible. Lows in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, some showers possible early, then decreasing clouds in the afternoon. Highs again near 80. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gerst.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, we continue with 2-a-days in the NFC South and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. These guys have been the standard of this division in recent years, although last year they did not win it. Thanks a lot. They went 8-9, kind of crumbled down the stretch, and to me feel like a team in complete transition mode. I don't know what they could do. To me, they're a franchise that's heading down the road. They can kind of stay a course, and the end game probably isn't that spectacular, or they can off-ramp and kind of try to rebuild this thing on the fly. Be careful what you wish for. They were 8-9 a year ago. They bring in some great leadership. Guy like Alex Anzalone, who was a great linebacker in Detroit for the Lions. He comes in to kind of bolster that defense. They were pretty good in the draft. Reuben Bain, they get him at 15 overall, which to me felt like a little bit of a steal. That kid's just a baller. I don't really care about the length of his arms. I think he'll be fine in the NFL. I like Josiah Trotter in the second round as well. The key losses are heartbeat of the organization losses. Mike Evans and Lavonte David. I mean, Mike Evans is an iconic Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Lavonte David is an iconic Tampa Bay Buccaneer. So you've lost that portion of it. So this is kind of that thing where they, to me, feel like a team that has one foot in, hey, let's go win the division, and another foot in, hey, let's kind of start over with this with some of the young talent that we have. And to me, this just comes down to, do they get off to a good start? If they do, perhaps they ride it out. If not, maybe they punt and go a different direction and move off of Baker Mayfield. But regardless of which direction they go, the Baker Mayfield thing will loom over this entire season for them, because they are in the position that the Cleveland Browns are in with Baker, which is, he's good enough to be your starting quarterback, but is he good enough to elevate you beyond that? If you dream of winning a Super Bowl, he's probably not the quarterback for that. He's probably the quarterback that can get you to the playoffs, win a division, in some instances even win a playoff game. He's done it there. He did it in Cleveland. But there's a ceiling on it. And so that's kind of what this season is going to be about to me for the Tampa Bay Bucks, is which lane do they stay in? Do they stay in the let's contend, let's win the division? Or do they say, hey, let's blow this thing up and kind of start over?
Yeah, this year five for Todd Bowles, and it does feel like, you know, the 5-year mark is where I think an organization would all look at their head coach, who's finished first in the NFC South 3 times. The divisional round in 2023 was the furthest they've been. They lost both the other years. They made the playoffs in the wild card round. And then the second, like you had mentioned, in the NFC South, because the greatest team on God's green, the Carolina Panthers, won that division last season. With Baker, with Bowles, maybe those two are out at the same time. And Tampa kind of resets with a young core of Reuben Bain, Emeka Egbuka, and then tries to figure out, you know, what's... This could be a transformative season for all three teams in the NFC South. And the Buccaneers feel like they're on the quickest path, like a week 10 bye for them. I could see them 4-5. I could see them 7-2. Because that's just kind of, that feels like the player, or even 2-7 because of the Baker Mayfield effect. Yeah. Where he's playing out of his mind the first 2 weeks of the season. It's the Bengals and Browns. And he's talking about a revenge game or something like that for Cleveland.
Well, that's,
it's
happening,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. We need to be doing that. Like, hadn't it been long enough?
The greatest team on God's green. I like that one a lot.
Just Ronis. For the Carolina Panthers.
That's good.
Keep pounding, baby.
This seems like a team to me that was 8-9 last year, but it seems like the injury bug really bit them hard last year and hurt their chances a lot. They bring back pretty much their whole offense minus Mike Evans, and where we just talked about the Saints and some of the young guys they've brought in, I actually like a lot of the guys the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have brought in through the draft the last couple of years. And you may have been like, well, why would they draft Emeka Egbuka? They just drafted Jalen McMillan, and they've got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Well, Godwin's always had injury concerns, and Mike Evans is gone now. So it was a really good draft pick. Reuben Bain fell in their lap in the draft. This year, Kalijah Kancey has been good for them. I know Vita Vea has been there a while, but that was a good... So I like what they've done. I think the talent on this team is there. I think last year, like I said, I think the injuries just hurt them. I think they're better than 8-9. And I think this is the best team in the NFC South.
It probably should be if they stay healthy. But that's... So then what do you do? What do you do if you're them? Like, if you're running the Tampa Bay Bucks, what do you do? Would you give Baker Mayfield $50 million?
This is the exact question the Cleveland Browns had not too long ago.
I don't
think I do. I love Baker Mayfield, and I guess it's a cautionary tale because I would have rather had Baker Mayfield the last 5 years than what the Cleveland Browns have gone through, and I know that relationship was fractured, and maybe it never would have worked, but I would have liked having Baker as my quarterback than what they've had. I don't think you can give him $50 million.
I don't know, man. Joe Flacco was pretty fun. But I think you're right. You can't give him $50 million. And that's why I point like the week 10 bye, because then you kind of got a great middle of the season barometer of, all right, what are we doing?
I know these athletes don't owe teams anything other than to play for, you know, play for their contract.
Yeah.
But if I was Baker Mayfield, and I always thought this when he was in Cleveland, be a little self-aware, and you don't have to do this. You go out and get as much money as you can. I understand that. But maybe take just a little less so you have stability, you have guaranteed money, and then your team can build a team around you. And Baker's definitely a guy, when there's a team around you, that can get you places. I mean, they were a targeting call away from possibly being in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's so hard about him. That's why it's such a hard evaluation for him, because you get, I say this all the time about him, he's the best front runner in sports. It's a compliment. When it's going good, and when he has talent around him, and when he is in a position where people are believing in him and telling him how great he thrives. And he's a lot of fun. Like, he's fun in the locker room. He's fun with the fan base. He's chugging beers. Like, he's doing all of these things. But when it goes bad, you get like the press conference he had earlier this month in Tampa, when you just go, gosh, do we have to do that? Why do we got to do that, man? Like, so that's the thing you get with him. You get the full spectrum, positive and negative. And I don't think that's a $50 million quarterback is probably the position that you end up in on this one. Let's hit the categories on the Bucs. Let's start with the coach grade for Todd Bowles, Reese.
I'm going to give him a C+. 3 of 4 years they've made it into the postseason, but they've advanced only past the wild card round once. And last year was a disappointment, so slightly above average.
I think Todd Bowles is an A+ defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think he's a C head coach.
There just aren't enough. There aren't enough great coaches. Like, you kind of go, we go offense for a little while, then we go defense.
Pivot.
I think he's a B, C+, B-, something like that. Feels like his guys respect him. He's never had issues with players turning against him or anything like that. They've won more than they've lost, so I'll go B- on him. Uniform grade for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Reese.
It's also a C+ for me. Like, I've never loved what they do a regular uniform standpoint. The home red top, the away white top, they're okay, but those throwback creamsicles are an A++. So that's why I average it out to a C+.
I don't go A+ on the creamsicles, but I do go A-. I think the everyday Tampa Bay jersey is like a C-.
I think, and this is funny, like, as a kid, I thought the creamsicles sucked. I just thought, who would ever want to wear that? And maybe that's just because they lost a lot. I love them now. They look beautiful now, especially the all-white one. Like, it just really pops. But as a kid, I thought they really sucked. I mean, who would have two shades of orange? Like, it just was a weird uniform. I think that this uniform has never really been great. I think they've always kind of been like the sort of Raiders. And they just haven't ever landed the plane on it in terms of what the look should be.
Sort of Raiders.
You know what I mean? It's just take little components here or there. Just kind of a weird, I think it's like a D+, C- uniform grade. One franchise great you could add to this team. No Tom Brady, Reese.
Mike Allstott would be fun.
Oh, that was a different time in a different era of football.
Warren Sapp's probably the right answer here, but
I thought about Warren Sapp, but I think their defensive tackles are pretty damn good. They're really good at wide receiver, I believe. I think they're fine at running back here. Maybe you could say quarterback, and you could go like Steve Young or Tom Brady, although their time there wasn't long. I'm going to go Derek Brooks because he was a monster at linebacker, and I think their linebackers are okay, but they're not great.
I love the Derek Brooks play. I think because he's such a quiet dude, and got to know him a little bit when I was in Tallahassee because he was on the board at Florida State and was a Seminole great. He's awesome. I think it's Mike Evans. Like, who they just lost. Like, if you just put prime Mike Evans back on this team, Bakes throwing for 5,000 yards. Like, that's kind of all you need, and you'd win this division by a landslide. Franchise grade for the Bucs, S being the best, F being the worst, Reese.
I think this is a B tier.
They become that, I think.
Yeah. Certainly, you know, lucking into Tom Brady the way that they did, and then they pivoted from those stupid Arena Bowl uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
I have this franchise as a B-, and I know it's different regime and all of that, but there was a time this was the worst franchise and team in football. And yep. I still have that in my mind, so that's why I guess I go B-.
They've won 2 Super Bowls in the last 25 years, 30 years, so it's hard to, like, bang them too hard for that. But I still think it's a C+, B-, E franchise is probably what it is. So from a tier standpoint, I'll go C-tier, even though they got the 2 Super Bowls. It's strange the way that I kind of view that thing. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting. There might be this might be road to nowhere. I'm not sure.
Where this is a bust.
Busting?
Yeah.
I think this is a playoff team. I think if they stay healthy, they win the NFC South and they're in the playoffs.
They probably are a playoff team, that's a product of the division, but I'm not betting on it, as was evidenced last year. Evan Klosky, sports director, WTSP 10 in Tampa, will join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the
phone. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
The best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
So 25 years ago, when I was working in Tallahassee at the CBS affiliate, the best job in the state was at WTSP Channel 10 in Tampa, the sports director job there. That was the dream job in Florida. So it brings me great pleasure that a former intern of mine and a proud Buckeye named Evan Klosky now occupies that perch as the sports director of Channel 10 down in Tampa. Buddy, it's good talking to you. Congratulations on all your success. It's been a thrill from my perspective to see it, all of it very much earned. Let's get right to it. What do you do with Baker?
Yeah, well, first off, Bo, you know you're my guy. I appreciate you, and thank you for everything you did at the start of my career there. As for Baker, you know Baker. All this stuff fuels him. You know, the fact that the contract and having the attention on him, the chip on his shoulder, this fills up his tank. So, you know, where I think some players, it'd be a lot of pressure, and oh my God, I got to perform, and this and that. You know, the organization, they're not too worried about this being something that's going to hang over his head all season long. And then also from his perspective, this was a guy that played for $4 million in 2023. His career was almost over, relegated to, yeah, you're going to be a backup for the rest of your life. And then here he is kind of a handful of years later. He's going to make $40 million this year. He understands that he's in a really good position in his life. So I'm not too worried about Baker, certainly from a mental standpoint. And then just from an on-field standpoint, it comes down to, okay, is he going to be able to get back to what we saw a couple of years ago when he was with Liam Cohen? Obviously, last year he was super injured.
Yeah, and the thing that's so tricky about him is, and I think some people forget this, like when he signed with Tampa, it was to compete with Kyle Trask. Like he wasn't given the job, right? Like he had to go,
exactly.
Let alone everything with Carolina and the Rams, right? Like he's kind of everything he's gotten, he has earned on this road back.
That's the thing with Baker. Like, the adversity has hit him, right? He came into the league. He was a little bit of the golden child, a little bit arrogant. He still kind of is, and he'll admit to it. But the fact is, you know, he did get smacked upside the head by the league, right? Everything that kind of, it all was crumbling down in front of him. And he was able to pick himself back up. He was able to find success. He was able to figure out a path to being a starting quarterback in this league, one that can at least argue and fight for a big deal. Whether he's going to get it or not, you know, remains to be seen. But it's not crazy to think that he's deserving of some sort of 3-4 year extension. It's whether the Bucks want to give it to him. But the fact is, I think he's living a little bit on house money with everything that's happened in his life and the way he was able to come out on the other side. And again, he's just a dude. When you push this guy up against a wall, like, he's going to fight back. So he really, like, it drives him and it does fuel him. And, you know, the Buccaneers think it's going to bring the best out of him. And the best case scenario for the Buccaneers is that he balls out and they have to pay him a bunch of money, because you know what? That means they had a hell of a season.
Absolutely. And I say this all the time about him, and I was around him a lot for the entire start of his career. He's the best front runner in sports. When it's going well and when everybody believes in him, he just gets emboldened. Now, I saw the other side of it too, and he can become pretty cancerous. And I think he's grown up from a lot of that. I think what is going to be interesting about this is the Bucs are almost in the exact same position that the Browns were in when the Deshaun Watson opportunity came available for them. And obviously, retrospectively, you would not have done that deal. But at the time, they thought they were getting, well, they were getting the number one passer in the NFL. And they said, well, this guy could elevate us to a Super Bowl. So I think the question I'm curious about from your perspective and the fan base perspective down in Tampa is, do they believe that Baker Mayfield is a true blue franchise elevator quarterback that they want to be in business with in the next 5 years? Does it really come down to this season? Don't they know already?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Here, just from a fan's perspective, there are a large chunk of fans that just love Baker, which I think was very similar in Cleveland, right? I mean, he's got an infectious personality. Yep. You know, Baker's moved his family here. He's a part of the community here. So there are a lot of fans that say, hey, this is our guy. And then there are a lot of other fans who say, I'm not so sure about sinking $55, $60 million a year into this dude who hasn't necessarily you know, taken us close to the promised land. He just collapsed last year, you know, everything. And regardless, I think that from my feel on this is that the Buccaneers, they're at a pretty big inflection point, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say the season doesn't go the way that they want it to go. Todd Bowles is on the hot seat. They might have to change head coach, which means they have to change their offensive coordinator again, which means you're going to have to bring in a new head coach, a new OC. Do those people want Baker as their guy if things go south? And then if things don't go south, hey, you just pay him the money, you move forward, there's great building blocks here, and you know, away we go. But I think the Buccaneers see it as two things. A, we can buy a year of information. Let's see where our organization is at. We're confident in it, but you know what? We can't ignore the results that happened last year in that collapse. And then B, you know, if we can get the best out of him and maybe hold this a little bit above his head, what's the one thing you're going to do if you're Baker Mayfield this year? What's the one way you're not going to get paid next year? Getting hurt. So you know what the number one knock on Baker Mayfield is? Slide. Don't face the contact. Yeah. Please give yourself up. Throw it away sometimes. So maybe by having the contact in the back of his head, he actually does some of the things that the organization's been asking him to do, which is protect your body. Because last year, the guy got banged up. Some of it was bad luck, but a lot of it was self-induced by, hey, you can't always be that dog.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so funny. It's a lot of the conversations that they had up in Cleveland. Very similar. He's at a different stage, and so are the franchises. This looks like the best team in the division, though, right? I mean, we did the Bucs, and we did the Saints. We'll do the Carolina, and we'll do the Falcons tomorrow. Like, on paper, this looks like the team to win the division. Probably not a contender beyond that, but if it goes that way and they get back to being atop the division, who are some names that you've gotten an eye on in training camp that have jumped out?
First off, Reuben Bain Jr. Like, the thing is, and you know this, you talk with team officials about first-round picks, and usually when you talk with them, they say, yeah, you know, things are looking good, but, you know, we got to see how they're picking up the playbook, or we got to see how pads are, and they try to temper expectations because they don't want too much of it on a first-round pick. The minute that this guy has stepped in the building, it has been just praise upon praise, and as I'm watching him in training camp, he looks like the real deal. Like, it does feel like people way overthought Reuben Bain Jr. in the draft because he just has some smaller arms or whatever it might be. And the fact is, for Todd Bowles to have a guy like Reuben Bain Jr. to help that defensive line, assuming Vita Vea is going to be a part of this season, which is a different conversation. I do think he will they'll figure that out, and he will be a part of this year. But I think having that group of four, Vita, Kalijah, Yaya, Reuben, that completely changes the complexion of the defense and how they can put pressure. So that's certainly someone defensively that I have my eyes on. The other guy, like offensively, Kenneth Gainwell Jr. I know that everybody knows him from Pittsburgh last year, and he was a safety valve for Aaron Rodgers. He is going to do similar things here in Tampa Bay. He's going to be able to give Bucky Irving a little less time on the field. He got hurt last year. I think they realized this guy is not big enough to be a bell cow. Let's run him 15 to 20 carries. And then we can also use Gainwell, not just in the running game, but obviously as a receiver. And Zach Robinson is going to deploy him and Bucky at the same time. So those, I think, are two new guys to the organization who are really going to help, along with Alex Anzalone at linebacker, where this team has struggled mightily in the middle of the field with coverage. And Anzalone is going to fix all of that. So I see shades of 2019 Buccaneers defense under Todd Bowles when he first got here. I feel like he's finally starting to build this defense the way that he wants it. Maybe the cornerback depth isn't as good as he wants it, but a lot of things have been fixed from last year to this year.
Great stuff, buddy. I'll get you out of here on this one. How's fellow Buckeye Mr. Hartline doing down in the Bay Area?
Brian Hartline's doing well. We actually had a camp. I was able to see him before camp started, talked with him a little bit. And then also he still has to name a starting quarterback there at USF. But, you know, the great guy, the talent at USF is insane for the level that it is and the resources they're providing. They're going to open a new on-campus stadium next year. So where USF and South Florida are going are great. Brian's he's at least being taken care of from a hierarchy standpoint. And now we'll see how he does year one. That's going to be the big thing of now, can he implement it to wins and losses? Because we've seen a lot of great recruiters, you know, in college football. If there's one thing to bring in the talent, and there's another to get the wins and losses when it matters. But at least this level, I'm super optimistic on him. And I still yuck it up with him about Ohio State. we have that in common.
Very good, buddy. Thanks for your time, man. Greatly appreciated, as always.
I appreciate you. Have a great one.
There he goes, Evan Klosky, sports director at WTSP 10 in Tampa Bay, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We get you, you're officially endorsed in three things on the first Friday. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on the Football
Training Camp Report.
This report brought to you statewide by Safe Flat Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. There'll be a new element with Arthur Smith, now the offensive coordinator for the Ohio State Buckeyes. He was asked about their operation.
It's all logistics. You know, when you're subbing guys in and out, or if, you know, a guy comes out, like, you got to be clean, because that, you know, once they put that ball down, they wind that play clock quick, and we want to be clean operating, and you want to be able to change up the pace, and sometimes tempo is on the ball, and then cadence is a weapon. You just, people have, I mean, everybody's got the same analytics, or they can use AI now, whatever it is, they have the same numbers, but if you're consistently snapping, whatever what you're doing, you're snapping the ball at 2 seconds, those guys are going to pin their ear backs, or one, if you're late in the shot clock every time. So that's a game you got to study yourself and be able to, those are the games within the games, and when you have a quarterback like Julian, he can handle that stuff, and really the whole offense, it's not just him, I mean, it's everybody's got to operate. And they're trying to do the same thing on defense. I mean, they're doing that certain formation. They may check out of a pressure. They may check to this coverage, depending on what you're playing. And those are the games. I call them games within the games. There's so much happening at the line of scrimmage. Even if you're trying to be simple, I mean, the other sides, I mean, they catch up too. And so that's what makes Julian unique.
We'll have more of this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my God.
Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. More from Ohio State offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, his first preseason camp with the Buckeyes, and he talks about through this point of camp where the offense has continued to develop.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always unknown, you know, any new job, and obviously even if you're returning every season, you know, things that are going to come up, right? It's kind of life. But these guys have been awesome. You know, the progress we've made from spring, how we started camp, we just got to keep stacking these days. These guys are competing. I mean, we've got a lot of depth and we got a lot of competition, which is an awesome thing to have.
Smith also says the experience is also a useful tool. The season opener for the Buckeyes is Saturday, September 5th with Ball State. We'll have another report coming up tomorrow. This is Paul Keels on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
The new All Pizza Sale, Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeyes sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
They say 40.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The Friends are the guests and listeners.
Reza and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what are you on the poll today?
A daily fan poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, reasonable expectations for Ohio State this season. Your options are national championship, semifinal appearance, beat Michigan, quarterfinal appearance. Remember, reasonable.
The first one can't be win a national championship if it's reasonable.
Well, the first one's getting 42% of respondents. 28% say semifinal appearance, 25% say beat Michigan, 4% say quarterfinal appearance.
It's too soon for all of this. I'll abstain. We'll get to that in a week or two. I'm not there yet to choose the standard with which we will judge the Buckeyes. But no, it's, I probably would not say anything short of a national title is not a failure. I would not say that. All right, time for your officially endorsed on this First Friday.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday. Officially endorsed. Because everyone deserves two Fridays.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
Drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
This is an interesting one. We're just going to go with a straight whiskey endorsement today. So I stumbled into a liquor store here in the last couple of weeks, and I saw a bottle of Old Fitzgerald 7-year-aged bottle in bond 100 proof. And I just honestly like the look of the barrel. I thought the bottle looked cool, and I've had the birthday bourbon, and that's top shelf. It is a mash bill of 68% corn. So I'm typically, the ones I kind of gravitate to are the ones that are more of a wheated mash bill. So this is just a 20% wheat mash bill. So it's atypical for what I like. But this one hits right, man. It's really sweet. Their stuff is good. Real brown sugar finish to it. Got some spice and some vanilla in there as well. But really nice as a pour over a big rock. Throw a cherry in it and away you go. But it's a delight. It's a good one. Very, very good one.
I saw that one maybe two or three weeks ago at the store that I frequent, and I didn't grab it. I kind of wish I would have now.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's cool. I stumbled into it. So officially endorsed on this fine First Friday. Time for three things. Hit it, fellas.
Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. You see, kids, there were these things called CDs. And on these CDs were a list of tracks and songs that came in order, but you could skip over them from time to time. But you would put them in an apparatus and it would play your music. And these CDs were ultra expensive with one exception. And the one exception was if you sent Columbia House a penny, they'd send you a dozen. Now, you had to pay for six of them at a ridiculous point going forward, but I did this. And after 71 years, it is going away. Columbia House is going away. I did this many times, so I'm thankful for Columbia House, for August and everything after. Certainly another one that jumps out to me is the soundtracks, the Training Day sound or Judgment Day soundtrack. I know what you did last summer. Both of those, Dookie, those are all CDs that were purchased via Columbia House, and it's all going away.
Probably everyone our age, those CDs were purchased that way.
Those ones were owned by
Or at Coconuts or Media Play.
That's right, yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the Media Play on Sawmill Road is now, but I got Dookie from there. I also got International Super Hits.
Yeah, that's a
Where right. was that Media Play on Sawmill Road?
So it's right by the Olive Garden. So right there, you cross over 270.
Oh, I think it became a Golfsmith, and now it's like a learning center.
Okay. First thing out of me, two-time preseason Heisman Trophy winner and preseason first-round draft pick, Lenoris Sellers, is graduating from South Carolina in December. He told reporters that he doesn't have any classes this semester. He's only doing an internship at a local driving range. Thing or not a thing?
Jeez.
I got to tell you from personal experience, if you're driving the tractor, they're going to try to hit you.
I mean, that's got
to
be a sweet gig.
They are going to try to hit you. That's a fact.
First thing for me, I don't know if you guys saw the video, but there was another accident on 670, and it was caused by somebody stopping in the middle of the freeway because they didn't know if that was their exit or not or where they were going.
Is that it? That's what that is?
So,
God,
this happened to me on Monday. I was going to 71 North off of 270. I hadn't been up there in a while. The exit kind of got changed because of construction. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I needed to be over so fast. I was being greedy, and I was trying to beat the traffic. I missed the exit because I didn't realize I didn't have enough time. You know what I did? I kept going. I got on the next exit. I turned around, and I went, it's not worth somebody's life. People, quit stopping in the middle of the freeway.
I think it's the all of the auto, or not autopilot. I think it's all of the like ways and the apps that are, they don't get the turn, and then they were waiting for the app to update them on where to go because nobody knows where they're going anymore. That's my theory on that. Is it mine? Oh, yeah, it's mine. First, sorry, that one, there was a lot to that, a lot of meat on that bone. Number two for me, first day of school in the books for the boys. Everybody, just crushed. Everyone was happy. Good days, all of it. But my God, were they zonked. I've never seen this. Beamsy voluntarily went to bed at 7:55. That's how tired my guy was.
Dang.
6 a.m. came early for him the day before. So he went to bed on his own at 7:55.
Sounds like me after golfing 36 holes. He's learning. Right.
You get older. Yeah, you got up that bedtime by an hour or so at least. NFL's got their second week of preseason games starting tomorrow. Raiders, Texans, 49ers, Chargers is your Thursday slate. On Friday, the Jets are playing at the Steelers. Will Howard's going to make the preseason start for Pittsburgh. It's just going to be Will and Drew Aller, the quarterbacks that Mike McCarthy plans to play on Friday. There's probably not enough room for all three of them, including Aaron Rodgers. Mason Rudolph's not going to play. He looks like he's going to be traded, but hope the best for Will.
Second thing for me, ladies of Upper Arlington and Grandview, I don't know if you have a shot or not, but this is your last night to do so, because our boy's getting married tomorrow.
Yeah, Bo. No shot.
So Reese won't be here tomorrow because he's going to be partaking in his nuptials at the courthouse. So congratulations, fella. We'll miss you the next 2 days, but enjoy it.
We just got to get you there, Reese. The collective number three from all of us, we got to get you there. There's one more First Friday when you could be tempted. Stay between the navigational beacons, my friend. Keep it straight. Nothing to see here. Knock them dead tomorrow, buddy.
Thanks. Looking forward to it. It'll be something.
Yes, it will be. It'll be something very, very cool. We'll reconvene tomorrow. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the